All right, welcome everybody to our second episode of the Blind Side Blitz. I'm Jim McPhee, and alongside me is Mr. Joe DeCapita.
What's going on? What's up, everybody? Welcome to Blind Side Blitz.
Oh, yeah, baby. We're excited
to
be here.
All you Blitz maniacs out there, hey, if you're new to the show, you can find this podcast as well as our political or entertainment and other sports podcasts at our website, grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us on YouTube and rumble.com. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube and keep this train going. Also, anywhere you get your podcasts. That's right. We're not just going to be showing up on the YouTube or the website, but also you can take us on the go with you. Anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora, you name it, we're there. Make sure you follow us there as well.
Oh, yeah, Joe, and we went live for the NFL draft. That was the first time we ever did that for the whole picks and everything of the night. It was super exciting. First of all, I want to thank Roderick David and Scott Angle for being with us that night. It was a pleasure hanging out with those guys and talking some football and getting their insight, too, Joe.
I mean, absolutely.
Scott, not just about the Seahawks. You know, he works for the Seahawks.com as a writer, but then also he's a writer for Rotoballer, too, as well. So to get some insight of what he's saying, and before even some of the picks came down, he's like, this is what I wrote about in my article that we could see happening. And lo and behold, that same stuff happened that night. So it's cool to have that on our show, and the fact that it would be almost like a prediction right there to come across as it was just going to unfold within that evening. So it was cool. And then Roderick's getting his point of view about the draft from inside the war room and to see what that's like as a scout, scouting some of this young talent, and the fact that after, you know, day three is all set, you have those unrestricted or undrafted free agents there that were tempted to be signed here. And what's funny, too, was I was hearing, too, also on the radio that it's funny that being an undrafted free agent here after the draft is almost a better situation than being drafted in the last round because – there you are, you're there, and you get to pick what team you're going with and sometimes get even a better deal, you know, money-wise. It works out for some of those guys. And to find a roster to where it fits them, where they can possibly shine and make the roster.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is, like, the most critical part of the draft, everybody knows first, second, third round. That's, like, the real exciting part to see how high a value in a player you can get and be able to obtain to make your club better. But really, the real hard work is done in day three. Day three is when you're going to find some guys that maybe have a chip on their shoulder. They're trying to prove to everybody that they can play at the next level or they excel extremely. Like, listen, we see it and everybody talks about it. Tom Brady, like, how could you not talk about him, you know, being a sixth round pick from Michigan? Nobody really knew a lot about him. He only had a few games of tape to look at. We talk about JJ McCarthy this year, not having enough tape. How about Tom Brady? You know, only a handful of starts. So you can find those hidden gems from time to time. And then at the very least, if you really hit it on the nail on the head, you can find someone that's at least going to stick around for another 10 years and kind of be a rotational piece for you.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. So here we go. It's the NFL Draft Recap Show. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through all the teams getting A through W, you know, as it is here. We're not going to go through and give you grades, stuff like that. Enough shows are out there doing all that stuff. Yeah. We don't do that, you know, because, again, you're not going to know. You're not going to know how these things pan out. So I can't actually grade somebody right now just upon our opinion right now before they even hit the field.
They haven't even played
the
snap.
We're not
going
to do this. Yeah, so come on. It's ridiculous. All right, so what we're just going to do is we're going to go here, and we're going to ask you guys out there, so light us up in the comments, too. What'd you like and what you didn't like here about, you know, for every team? So this is what we're going to tell you, like, what we did like and what we didn't like per team. So let's go down through the roster of the picks of the Arizona Cardinals here now, Joe. You know, and first of all, Marvin Harrison Jr., again, those first couple picks in this draft panned out just like how everybody kind of saw. I mean, and when that happens with the draft mainly, too, is because those top guys, you kind of already know there isn't going to be too many moves and jockeying going on, but nobody was really surprised for a good margin here within at least the top 10, I think, of some of these picks. And Marvin Harrison Jr., we've heard about it with the Arizona Cardinals. They go and get their guy. So, I mean, I absolutely like that situation for them. It only helps Kyler Murray and stuff like that. And then they also started to attack some of those weaknesses that they had to try and fill this roster.
Yeah, you know, they did a really good job, and they had enough picks, right? Like, they had a ton of picks in this draft. So you got – when you have multiple picks, you should have a really good draft. You know, you shouldn't be able to miss on that many guys. But one guy that I'll point out, everybody knows Marvin Harrison Jr. A lot of people had him as their number one overall wide receiver, and the Arizona Cardinals kind of fell in love with him very early in the process. So they did a lot of homework on Marvin, and they were just pretty much set. Probably a couple weeks before we even got to the draft, they were like made that predetermination, like that's our guy, we're going to get him. Good for them. One other guy that I really did like in this draft was cornerback Max Melton out of Rutgers. He was like one of my sleepers in this draft, and I was kind of hoping, not going to lie, that he would slide to the third round from my team. But man, great value in the second round. And this kid's going to be a starter. He's definitely going to come in and looking to take someone's job 100%. One pick that I really wasn't that satisfied. I felt like it was a little bit of too early for me anyway. I don't want to say reach because everybody kind of used that terms way too often. But he wasn't my cup of tea. I'll just put it that way. Darius Robinson, D tackle from Missouri. He played D end for Missouri this past year, and he did very well. He had 8.5 sacks. He's very tall, lanky, very powerful type of dude, but he's a little heavier at 285 that you would want to be on that outside. Mm-hmm. Not very quick, doesn't have a lot of burst. So I felt that they drafted him a little too early, but I definitely could see him kick inside the D tackle at the next level, and they can kind of build off of that using his power and being able to like hold up at the point of attack.
Yeah, I hear you there. Same thing. And the fact that with Arizona again, and like we talked about this with every team, this draft altogether was kind of strange. It's different than a lot of others. Is that overall everybody was a winner in this one? I mean, so you can't really judge anybody for some of these things. You know, just see how it pans out. Some, like again, it all depends on what you like and what you maybe consider a reach and where you think some of these guys are in their potential and where they are as a starter even right now. So
yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too, is that there were some picks that were a little surprising for different reasons, but when you look at the draft as a whole with all these teams, like nobody came away with a terrible draft. They might have, there's a couple of teams that didn't do as well as I thought they should have, but not as many as typically, you know, every other season. Like there's been a lot of like, kind of like, if you want to call them losers of the draft, that a lot of mock draft experts out there that kind of visualize a team in a certain way and they go a completely different direction, and they think that it's like, okay, well, that was pretty terrible. I don't think you got value. I don't think you got guys that are going to play at the next level for you or even start. So there's always those conversations, and we'll probably have a couple of them as we go. But I have to say that for the most part, every team had a decent to good draft. I mean, obviously there's those core four or five organizations that always draft extremely well. They don't overthink it, and they just take value. And you saw that with the Steelers and Eagles, but we'll get to them later in the show.
Yeah, so let's move on to the Atlanta Falcons again. And that's probably the only major hot topic that everybody's kind of bringing up, you know, and that was a big kind of head-scratcher for some people, even on the broadcast with Michael Penix Jr. coming out as that number one pick right there because, Atlanta, we even thought about this when we were doing our mock draft. Mm-hmm. Like, what do they usually do? I mean, they went and got Kirk Cousins in free agency, so you figured, all right, we're going to lock him in, and then they're going to get him some receivers, you know, some like things like that, some weapons, some more weapons, even though they have weapons.
I think Aroma
maybe
even
one of those
there.
Guys, was there, and how powerful would this offense be? And then you can just work on your defense after that. And then maybe take a shot at one of these quarterbacks later on, you know, or see what you're going to do, maybe develop under Kirk Cousins. But right off the bat, there it is. You know, Michael Penix Jr., bang, people are kind of shocked. I know your brother was on here live with us, and he was kind of flipping out because he was hearing it ahead of time. And Kirk Cousins himself was even shocked, too. So, I mean, it was pretty crazy because he's not saying
he's not saying that right now.
But, but there you go. And maybe they're just thinking in another situation. They're like, all right, here, people got doubts about this guy, but if we pick him here and he is who he is and who we think he is under Kirk Cousins, we already got our franchise quarterback right away. We have good weapons that are still young even right now, and then maybe still even build for the near future and not so far future.
Well, it's funny you say that, Jim, because the way the GM is talking, it's not near future. He's talking as crazy as like, oh, he's not going to start for another 4 to 5 years, maybe even 6 years. So here's my issue with this whole scenario is that the Atlanta Falcons came on with the 8th overall pick. Great and dandy. A lot of people, even just regular sports fans, I know my brother's a huge Falcons fan, so he was hoping for like a pass rusher. It's something that's kind of eluded them for many years. They keep taking them in the first round, and it just doesn't seem to work out for them. So they were hoping maybe this year you had a guy by the name of Dallas Turner. You had your pick of maybe even if you liked Laiatu a little bit better, you could have took him. But maybe it was a little too rich for them, so I'm not sure 100% how aggressive they were in trading down. But I have to think that they explored it at least a little bit. But for them to kind of not go either direction, not even corner, when they could have had their choice there as well, they go with quarterback. Now, initially when I saw the pick, I'm like, wow, Michael Penix to Atlanta? Nobody saw that coming. You know what I mean? Not even Atlanta fans. They were all expecting corner, edge rusher, something like that. But Michael Penix, I'm not upset with the pick. I think Michael Penix is worth that pick. And he definitely could be a starter at the next level. But here's my problem with it. Initially, I thought it was a great pick. Until I started to hear things about the GM and him trying to explain to the owner why he took quarterback, the owner, Arthur Blank, was extremely pissed off in that war room, staring at Fontenot, the GM, and wondering, dude, why the hell did you take a quarterback? So Fontenot had to spend several minutes to talk to the owner and try to explain his reasoning. So not only were the fans upset, the owner was pissed. And then for him to come out and say, everybody expected, like, hey, you can get out of that Kirk Cousins contract. You can. In 2 years, after 2 years, you can kind of get out of that deal and save a chunk load of money. And then I'm thinking, here comes Penix in the third year, going to be the starter. And then Fontenot speaks later on, says, oh, no, no, no. There's no rush. Like, no, Penix is going to be the backup guy, and maybe 4 to 5 years later, he'll be our answer. Are you kidding me? He's already, like, damn near 24 years old. You're going to have this guy come start for you when he's going to be around 27, 28 years old? Are you kidding me? That just doesn't make logical football sense. And if that was – I know the fear for Atlanta was, like, they didn't want to be in quarterback purgatory.
Yeah, right.
So they wanted to be ahead of the game, much like Green Bay has. But if you have plans of him not even starting until 4 to 5 years later, I think what was the point of taking him now? Why take quarterback now? Wait a year or two later, then take quarterback or trade up for it. So to me, I liked the pick initially. I hated the pick after what I've heard. They could have gotten something of need right now that could help them right now trying to win the championship instead of now you're paying Kirk Cousins big money and you drafted a quarterback that unfortunately sounds like he's not going to play for a while.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, so what is the story here? Because again, that was your pick, and then they follow through in defense, like I talked about, what we thought even the game plan is fill holes on defense. But seniority kind of that first round pick, that's what you talk about, Joe. You don't usually pick that first round pick unless you're really set that has to be a starter.
Has to be a starter.
Has to be a starter. Yes. Has to be a guy that you're going to plug in pretty quickly.
Yeah,
or at least a year later. Quarterback, that's gonna be your main thing. For it to be down in the plan and then go and get your other depth positions here, and not even depth position, but other holes that you need. And they need to be your starters even too, but now you're getting them in the fourth, fifth rounds. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's less of a chance that they're going to be productive here for your team too. So again, maybe get some of your holes here in that first pick. But what do you think? So is that even your like and your dislike at the same time?
Basically, but I will go take it a step further. Now, here's the thing is where the Atlanta Falcons came back in the second and third rounds and were like, hey, you know we kind of screwed up. And who knows? I don't know what the conversation was had between the owner and GM, but it's awfully funny how in the second and third rounds, you went right to D-tackle. You went right to edge rusher with Braylon Trice coming out of Washington and Ruka Roro coming out of Clemson. I really like the ceiling. Like, I think there's a lot of potential for Rook. Mm-hmm. However, the problem with Rook is that he is kind of raw, has amazing talent, amazing physical talent. But if they can coach him up and teach him the game of football a little bit more. He's played only like one season as a starter. And then you got Braylon Trice. Braylon Trice, actually, funny story, is Braylon lost a ton of weight just for the combine to kind of get high numbers athletically. But I got a feeling that he's not going to be playing at 238, 240 range at the next level if he's going to be playing DN. So he'll most likely gain that weight back that he held on to back in Washington. And he was a stud. He was a pass rush. He was kind of like an underrated pass rusher at Washington. Is strong at the point of attack, had power moves, had a little bit of bend to him. So he has the potential to be at least a solid edge rusher. And I think that could be something more like a sleeping type of draft pick there for Atlanta.
All right. So let's head to the Baltimore Ravens again. And Joe, again, Ravens always draft well. You know what it is
always
with them. They do it.
This is one
and
of those
again,
teams.
Another thing. They just, whatever they do, and they seem to get what they want. And following the draft this year, I think it was really good for teams, like we said. And it's odd because sometimes who's there, they're going to – who gets picked, and then all of a sudden there's a rush for this. Mm. Like we even saw that maybe with
– Yeah, there's always a run.
all of a sudden maybe, Bo Nix, stuff like that. So a lot of different quarterbacks see it thrown in there. Record, by the way. I mean, so we have seen history this past one too as well, yes. Joe. But Nate Wiggins was there for them again, just fell into their lap. They didn't have to do any moving. No. A lot of these teams just didn't really have to move that much, here and there. Buffalo Bills moved back a bunch of different positions and into the second round. So it was pretty interesting to watch them go further back when I thought they even had a need that they could grab one of these guys that was even here. So I'm sure Buffalo fans, when we get to them a little bit, we'll be scratching their head, have something to sound off about here. But Baltimore, solid team and solid franchise, always getting it done, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, with Baltimore, they're one of those franchises, just like the Chiefs, just like the Packers, there are these Steelers, even like Eagles. They all draft extremely well, and I feel like, as crazy as it sounds, it's just common sense to them.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They don't try to overthink about taking X player or Y player. They're like, hey, this is our board. We have value all the way down, and we're going to take the best available. So I love the direction that those franchises have taken. The Ravens are definitely one of them. Here they have my number two overall corner in Nate Wiggins, a guy that definitely should have been in the argument to be taken earlier, but wasn't. Ends up sliding right to him, right into their laps, like you said, Jim. Like, how could they not love this? You get a guy who, if you're going to nitpick at him, the only thing you can say is, well, he's very light. He needs to add weight, add muscle. No problem. The Baltimore Ravens training people will get that job done. They are going to get some weight on him, probably an extra 10 to 15 pounds. Mm-hmm. He'll still be able to hold on to that speed of his and that acceleration, and he'll lock people up and down the field. I have no concerns for Wiggins. I think he's going to definitely put on the extra weight. So then you'll see him be a little bit more aggressive than he was in college and make better tackling, better tackling formation and all that, like be able to bring that guy down. So I think that in the short term that Wiggins will develop over the course of this season. And before you know it, at the end of the year, we're going to be talking about this kid as being the next shutdown corner in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So I love the pick. I felt it was tremendous value for where they got him at 30 overall. Other than that, when I was looking at their draft, they were pretty solid all the way through. Mm-hmm. The only one that I kind of like was a question for me was Adisa Isaac, who – I wasn't very high on going through this process, but then again, like we're using limited resources to look at these guys. So Adisa Isaac for me, pass rushing phenom for the Penn State Lions there. I liked some of his tape, but like Chop Robinson kind of jumps off the page to you. When it comes to Adisa Isaac, he has quickness and speed, but I don't think at the next level he's going to be able to take on these tackles or get around these tackles very easily like he was able to do in college. So I think it's going to be kind of like a slap in the face for him at the next level. And to take him with that third round pick, I felt like it was a little too rich.
Right, I hear you there. What do you think about the fact of even getting Iowa State's defensive back, TJ Tampa? Because, again, I think that was one of those guys you really liked, too, as
yeah,
well.
I love them.
That was – they were able to get him late, and now you look at, again, Nate Wiggins on one side, and then we'll see what TJ Tampa can do with this team, too. I mean, that might be a nice factor for them, too.
So what the information that I gathered was that was the culmination of talent pushing down talent in the draft. Mm-hmm. And TJ Tampa – as much as he played a lot of zone at Iowa State, I feel like some teams that like to do both man and zone shied away from him altogether. Maybe not even had him on their boards because there was some concern. Well, we're not sure if he can really play man. He played a lot of zone, and that's what he was good at. So maybe we don't put him on our board. But I think that's all hogwash. I think TJ Tampa it has the ability to play both. Mm-hmm. And the Ravens, yes, they do play predominantly zone. However, he has the capability to do both in my eyes. I think he could definitely develop that with better coaching at the next level and not be so uncomfortable doing that. So I definitely think he's going to be a steal, in other words, for the Ravens and for them to get this guy in the fourth round. It blows my mind. Mm-hmm. For a lot of other teams, all 31 other teams let him slip till Baltimore's pick in the fourth round. So I just think it's another home run for them. And, yeah, he might not get on the field early on, but this pick could also be like a future pick. Like all the good organizations can maybe pick a year or two ahead with talent, and TJ Tampa could be one of those. When Marlon Humphrey moves on or wants a new big deal, maybe they're not looking to re-sign him, and they're just going to insert him with TJ Tampa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we look at the Buffalo Bills, which I just talked about, that moving back, still able to get a wide receiver in Keon Coleman, and right. We'd even talked about that, you know, draft night with Roderick. It's funny, they're still able to move back, get draft capital, still get a wide receiver that I think you even like, too, one of those guys that can get those contested type of throws here, something that I think Josh Allen would like to have. I mean, mm-hmm. Stephon Diggs, a different type of wide receiver. I mean, he's scrappy and can make a lot of moves, stuff like that. But this, again, one of those guys, if you got those jump balls, you can kind of go up for him. And a nice thing that would be great for Josh Allen on the run and whatnot.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is I think the Bills had – I mean, NFL.com kind of gave them a B-plus grade. And like we said before, we don't do grades.
Yeah.
It's too early. Mm-hmm. But they gave him a B-plus, and that kind of – I don't agree with that if you're going to give them a grade, because when you look at their whole draft, they were hitting on all cylinders with their value. Mm-hmm. Keon Coleman slides to them. They were able to trade back, actually, get more picks from 28 to 33 and still get a wide receiver like Keon Coleman's, you know, talent. So mm-hmm. a very big, long, physical he's got speed too. Like a lot of people kind of were nitpicking the fact like, oh, he doesn't have the quickest burst or acceleration. It's kind of like build up speed. But man, when you saw him at the combine, like, I don't know, I saw enough explosion to where the dude was running 23 miles an hour through a drill. Pretty fast for a guy his size, for anybody. Mm-hmm. So for him to be able to display that at the combine, I was sold. I was like, okay, this guy's got the size. He's got a wide catching radius. These big hands that can catch pretty much anything. We've seen him catch one-handers over the shoulder, everything. Mm-hmm. So an amazing pick for the Bills. And Josh Allen was super ecstatic because he was so happy that as soon as that pick went in, he gave him a phone call. It was like, hey, bro, let's get to work. You know what I mean? So
absolutely, yeah.
Good for the Bills. And like I said, as far as the rest of their draft, Cole Bishop, really good defensive back for them at 60. Dwayne Carter was an amazing value pick, I feel like, at D tackle. Guy that's going to be rotational, at least in his first year. Ray Davis, running back. Like, a lot to like there. Now you get depth at that position and a different type of back than James Cook. You get a very physical, a guy that can also make people miss and do everything you need him to do. So the list kind of goes on and on and on. Cedric Van Pran Granger, one of my favorite interior offensive linemen, most likely be a starter, maybe even this season at center. So they got a lot of value as you go down the list. And honestly, I can't really give a negative because I feel like they had such a solid draft that your last few picks are special teams guys, possibly guys that maybe not make the cut. So all in all, I think they did an excellent job.
All right, we've got Big John in the house with us today.
What's going on, Big John?
Big John, he says, how did the Bills not pick up Adonai Mitchell in the second round?
Because they simply didn't want him. And here's the thing about Adonai Mitchell. There was a lot of, like, praise for Adonai Mitchell. I wasn't a huge fan, and it didn't seem like a lot of the 32 teams were of him as well. Definitely a gifted receiver. He definitely has a lot of talent, but for me, on tape, the problem that I had was at times, not all the time, but at times, it seemed like he was a little disinterested. He didn't give it 100%, finished the route at the end. Like, there was moments throughout the game where it almost looked like he was disinterested and didn't go all out every single snap. So that, to me, along with, like, some of the miscues in terms of catching, it showed up on tape where it was like an easy catch and it just kind of like just bounced off his hands for some reason. Mm-hmm. So focus might be a question. I think at the next level with better coaching, I think that he can kind of iron out those minor details and become a better receiver at the next level than he was in college. He was a good receiver in college, but I feel like with better coaching, they're probably going to get that shaked out of him to the point where like they get a solid player. But again, when you're talking about a player that you still have to work on things versus a player like Keon Coleman, who I think was just more solid and something that they were looking for in terms of size, that's why the Bills went with Keon Coleman.
Yeah, and again, like you said, it's whatever they want to do. We talked about it with Roderick, too. Again, maybe you see that Adonai Mitchell here. Mm-hmm. He actually brought a few up, and again, they weren't drafted. They end up going further back. So
right.
You never know. Like you said, you don't know what's going on in that room and who they're talking about and what they are.
That conversation right there, they probably had Adonai Mitchell in that conversation, Keon Coleman. Who knows who else they were thinking about? Because usually, like we were talking to Roderick, former Atlanta Falcons scout during the draft, and we were kind of picking his brain about, you know, what are some of the thought processes and conversations had in the war room for each pick. And he was like, you usually have a few players that you have a discussion maybe about. There's always one guy that you really want. But if you're going to trade back, you're like, hey, well, we want Keon Coleman. You know, Bills probably wanted Keon Coleman all along. And then they're like, we'll trade back. If someone takes him, then we got B and C as options. Maybe Adonai was one of them. So, you know, there's pros and cons to everything, every pick. And we're not going to know now, but 2 years at least down the road, then we can kind of get an idea of these players at the next level.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. Again, and I think overall the Bills, again, trying to find some needs. And I think what they really want to get was more draft capital for them.
Right.
Let's move on to the Carolina Panthers again, who they were one of the guys that traded there, even with the Buffalo Bills. Out of nowhere, again, we were talking about, like, we weren't even going to figure out, you know, how much scouting we were going to do with the Carolina Panthers, and we're at the end of the night, we're watching it, you know, on the screen, and like, boom, Panthers are on the clock. We're like, whoa, here they come. They're back in it.
That's right,
Joe. And what do you think you like most about, you know, what the Panthers did, even in trading up here? Was it worth it for them, you know, to move up? Obviously, in their eyes, I'm sure
the Panthers think it is, but were really aggressive in this draft, which was interesting because they didn't have a first-round pick until they traded up into the bottom of the first round to get a guy to help Bryce Young. You know, wide receiver was a big, still a big kind of like department where they need to influx it with more youth and more talent. And they end up looking out to grab Xavier Legette, one of my favorite wide receivers, definitely in the top 10. For me, I believe I had him at 5 or 6. Very dense type of wide receiver, very big, physical, strong wide receiver with tremendous speed at 4.3. The one knock on Xavier was like route running. It wasn't as crisp as you'd like to see it, especially with that fast 40 time. And I think that with obviously at the next level, he's going to be coached up. He's going to be working on route running all throughout the practices and training camp, and he's going to get better at it. So by week one, you might see a little bit different of a receiver and Legette and a much improved one. So that's one player that I really like. The other one that I have to say is a guy that I thought they took too early in running back Jonathan Brooks. Now, a lot of people consensus-wise were saying Brooks was number one running back coming into this class. But, man, second round? I felt like that was early for any running back to be taken. Maybe third and then moving forward. But, man, I think that was a little too early. Other than that, I think the rest of their draft is pretty solid. Because they were trading up and maneuvering around the draft, they lost some of that compensation to utilize. But overall, pretty solid. Jatavion Sanders, tight end. Mm-hmm. He's just a receiving tight end, though. So, like, if you're looking for him to help out in the blocking game, I think it's sadly mistaken. So that probably would be the only knock I would give their draft is the fact that they took Jatavion Sanders, and I think they could get him maybe a round later. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how that all plays out for them. Bryce Young, I know, is happy because he's got not only one but a couple of starting caliber weapons that he's going to have at his disposal this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think they just wanted to help get a weapon here for Bryce Young to do something. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it pans out. I really don't think they're going to turn this team around overnight. It's not like one of those things like we saw with Houston. But we'll see. I think it's you know.
It's predicated on Bryce Young. Bryce Young,
yes.
His development from his rookie year was embarrassing at times. So you got to wonder, like, at this upcoming season, is the offensive line going to remain healthy? Is the offensive line going to play better for him? Because it seemed like he was getting rushed out of the pocket quite often. And it ruined what development you possibly could have with him in his rookie year. So come full circle now. Let's see if the whole team and Bryce Young himself can get a little bit better for this season.
All right, we've got stuff from Sports Grumblings ourselves here. Our mother company here, the Mothership.
The Mothership.
He says, isn't Leggett a Mingo clone, Joe?
I don't believe so. No, he's a very different body type. He's very physical and big, but with Xavier Leggett's speed, which is off the charts for his size, you got to love his contested ball opportunities that he can make. And I really think that if they nail down his route running and prove that a little bit more, that this kid is going to be electric at the next level. Definitely going to be a huge help for Bryce Young. Will most likely be his favorite target over Adam Thielen.
Mm, oh, yeah, definitely. Again, you're going to have that veteran on the other side, and then hopefully this guy will be the guy that's going to go be with Bryce Young in there and get it going. That brings us to the Chicago Bears, though. Joe, the Bears.
Yeah, right.
We've heard from Caleb Williams already on the press conference and stuff. I think they did pretty good again. I mean, Caleb Williams, you knew it was their spot. Only lo and behold here to see what happens in this upcoming season. They go and get, Roma Dunze too in the same draft, so they get the wide receiver to go along with them. Everybody's excited, they get the tackle too on top. So it looked like they were doing everything they could to help this team out, especially after the free agency that they had too. I mean, so when you thought it even could get is any better, they really handled it in the draft, I thought, too, as well. And even grabbed a punter, too. And that punter, Aiden Taylor, that one of our guys in the last broadcast would brought up, like, go get Taylor. Well, they've got Taylor now, too. So, and I think it's hilarious how Caleb Williams goes and says, hey, it's cool, welcome to the team, but I don't think you'll be out there kicking so much, because the offense is going to be out there doing their thing and getting them touchdowns. So, but Bears, again, I'm excited to see what they can do here, What do you think, Joe?
So here's the thing is, with the first two picks, when you have two picks in the top of the 10, top 10 picks in the first round, it's a success all around. You're going to get two blue chip players all together, and they grab what they believe is the number one quarterback in Caleb Williams. Now, I'm going to be a little bit different than most people around, the draft, and I'm going to say I did not have Caleb Williams as my number one quarterback coming out. And it's not – I'm not questioning his arm talent. I'm not questioning his mobility, or his stature, because everyone's kind of like, oh, he's only 6'1". He's got good size for that body type at 6'1". Definitely has huge arm talent. It's very mobile. My biggest thing is that there's some red flags with him going into the NFL from his college days. So USC, they typically ran a one-read offensive system. It was very simplistic. He only had to make one read and make the throw if it was there. If it wasn't, that's where we saw a lot of game tape with him creating time or escaping the pocket and taking off down the football field. So at the next level, it's a lot more complex offenses up at that level. So I kind of question, can Caleb handle it at the next level? Can he get the playbook down? Is he going to be able to read defenses and – and go through progressions through each snap and make the right decision and make the right throw. So I think for me, other than those X's and O's part, there's red flags off the field. I question his leadership. You know, there was things with him outside that I heard rumors about, and it was just kind of made me think, like, what kind of a player is anybody getting in this Caleb Williams? So to me, I'm a little bit more critical of Caleb Williams being picked number one overall. Still think he's a tremendous talent. I think he was deserving to be picked in the first round. I'm just not as crazy about taking him one overall. Other than that, they crushed it with Roma Dunze at 9. I can't believe Roma Dunze made it to 9. Yeah. I thought I had a sliver of hope for Atlanta fans, maybe possibly taking Roma Dunze there at 8 to kind of bolster that offense, especially having Kirk Cousins there. So they didn't do that, and Roma Dunze, and they don't overthink it. They just make the pick. So other than those two picks, that's kind of what kind of put them over the top in terms of their overall draft. But after that, they probably got themselves a starting punter in Torrey Taylor. The tackle, though, and Kieran, he's definitely a raw prospect. So even though they drafted him in the third round, he's still a little raw to where they're hoping they can get him up to speed to be able to be somewhat of a presence there.
All right, Joe, we got a familiar face in the house with us tonight. It's Mike.
What's going on, Mike?
Is with us tonight. He says Chicago has given Caleb Williams more than enough weapons than any other rookie quarterback has to throw to. Mm-hmm. If Caleb still struggles after year two, then he's who we thought he was. R.I.P. Dennis Green. Wow, he is.
Yeah.
Who we thought
my thing is this is the fact that he's right. For any quarterback that was going to get drafted by Chicago, they're coming into a way better situation than anybody could anticipate. You know what I mean? Like there's a ton of talent surrounding them. They have a solid offensive line. They have weapons galore. You know what I mean? Like, he's coming to a situation that typically a number one overall pick does not come into. So if he struggles and throughout the whole year, like, yeah, maybe he might struggle in the beginning because, you know, there's jitters involved and it's first time playing at the NFL level. But maybe it smooths out, and by the end of the season, you start to see the reason why you drafted him, hopefully. Or it goes the other way, and he kind of struggles like Bryce Young, where Bryce Young struggled to connect with his throws, and decisions were poor and would fumble the ball. That's the other concern about Caleb, is the fact that he holds the ball loose whenever he's running, much like Lamar does. So that leads to turnovers, you know what I mean? And that's my issue, is that the next level, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to handle it all in his rookie year, especially.
Right, and when you talk about that again, and like I said it before when we were breaking it down in comparisons again, I kind of compared him the way like Patrick Mahomes kind of looks, but not on that same level. But it's almost like he's trying to like tailor his game kind of to that a little bit. But I don't think he's going to be able to have as much success as Patrick Mahomes. That, you know, I think it could turn into poor turnovers with some of the decisions that he makes. So like you said, even palming the ball when he's trying to make some of those off the foot kind of throws could get him in trouble.
The biggest thing too is like, where did Patrick Mahomes get selected? At like around the 10 area.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's all I was saying is I don't think he's worth the number one overall pick, but I get it. If you want to stay there and that's your guy and you make your pick, great. I hope for the Bears fans that it pans out, because if it doesn't, then we talk about quarterback purgatory. Now they got to find they have to try to find another one. So after moving on from Fields.
Yeah, absolutely. When we talked about it even that night, it was funny because we were like, I think it was with Scott Engel.
Right.
He brought it up, and then I was like, yeah, because I actually just talked about it before. Last time they really had a good quarterback, you know, that they drafted, Jim McMahon, right, back then. Yeah. You'd have to go that far back, Joe, to when they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that's scary stuff.
It is.
So here we go. We got the Chicago Bears. We just handled. Now the Cincinnati Bengals. Right. Cincinnati Bengals in their first round grabbed Marius Mims. Again, another guy that you really liked here. Chris Jenkins on top of it, too. So I think you really like that. They got their tackle on the offense. Defensive tackle, too. My guy from Michigan, he's got it in his blood. Chris Jenkins is his father. I like that situation for them. And again, I think they're doing what they got to do too to get back to the playoffs and back further, you know, into the AFC Championship game.
Right.
Because I think they still got punched in the mouth by the Chiefs last time when they were in there, and they still smelling blood.
So the one thing that's kind of funny is that Cincinnati has like gone to offensive line play in the last 3 years because they have to protect Joe Burrow. He's already suffered a couple of injuries. It's kind of derailed the momentum that they've had going into playoff situations and what have you. But here you go. They go with Amarius Mims, one of my favorites, especially coming out of Georgia from as an offensive tackle. The only kind of thing that when you look at his tape, the only thing is like limited opportunities for experience. He's only had 8 games starting for Georgia, so he's limited in 1 year of true starter playing time. That's the knock on him. He's a little bit raw, a little bit, but not. I hate saying raw because it's not like he can't play, but there's some nuances in this game that need to be perfected, need to be worked on in terms of, you know, technical wise, footwork, hand placement, that type of deal. But I'll tell you right now, his talent is through the roof. Like the Bengals could have came away with possibly the best offensive tackle off the board because he wasn't number one overall, but I feel like it's because he still needs to work on things. So for Marius Mims, who knows? This kid could be a blockbuster selection here for the Bengals, locking it up at tackle for them. And then you mentioned Chris Jenkins, another D-tackle that I had in my top 5 D-tackles that I love Chris Jenkins. I love what he brings. He's a run stuffer. He's a guy that's going to create pressure for you. Not going to be the pass rusher, not going to be able to get like, you know, 6, 7, 8 sacks or anything like that, but a guy that's just a very good football player. You look at if you scan through the rest of the draft, they're another team that did a very solid job. There's some pros and cons to some of their picks. Like think of Eric All from Iowa, that tight end, a sleeper that I had in mind that he had back surgery, came back from it. But he looks the part at the next level. This guy could be a steal if he remains healthy. Very athletic. Got a tight end that you kind of look at, and I know he's from Iowa, so you're going to kind of make the comparisons of George Kittle. And it holds weight. It's not like something like, he's from George Kittle because he's from Iowa. No. Yeah. He has that talent, that ability to do so. And then the one knock that I'll give him is I wasn't crazy about the tight end from Arizona, Tanner McClatchin. Not my favorite dude. Definitely just going to be a receiver for you out of that tight end position. Never is going to block for you. I just kind of frown on that. A guy that's only going to be one-dimensional. So when he's in there, there's nothing to guess about what he's going to do. So that would be my only one knock on him.
Yeah, and I even like getting Jermaine Burton in this part because I've seen him make some pretty good one-handed catches. Like he's got one of those guys, if you rank him on Madden, like he's got the drops a little bit, but a spectacular catch is there. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like that boom or bust sometimes, I think, with him.
Number one thing with receivers, you got to catch the ball.
Yep.
So I don't care how fast you are and how great you are at route running. If you can't catch or struggle with it, that's going to be a big problem. We saw it with the Chiefs this past season where guys were dropping the
football. Absolutely. Mike Tackett's got another comment. He goes, how much faith does Cincinnati have in Trent Brown, given they've drafted Mims?
You got to remember this. Trent Brown hasn't been the most healthiest tackle out of anybody the past 3 years, 4 years even, maybe even longer than that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go back to when he was a Raider and then went back to the Patriots. Still, this guy was saying, oh, I'm hurt. I can't play. I just think this guy is definitely like just kind of, you know, stringing out the contract, just trying to make as much money as he possibly can before he announces his retirement. So Trent Brown, to me, is just the cabbage patch baby right now. He's just like, I don't want to work. I don't want to do anything hard. I'm on IR. Just leave me there.
Yeah, ride it out, you know, and get that contract again.
So
yeah,
I think
that even
this was it was a brilliant selection for them, and for them to have Mims there, I think it's a really good selection.
Absolutely, yeah. We're talking about the 2024 NFL draft. We're doing the recap right now. What did you like? What didn't you like? If your team out there, if you think they did a good job, didn't, let us know in the comments. Absolutely. Again, just like this show right here, you can find all your other shows here on the YouTube pages here for Grumblings Media or grumblingsmedia.com and anywhere you get your podcasts too as well. Not only for sports, but then also our political podcasts too as well and entertainment too. So check them out, grumblingsmedia.com on YouTube, Facebook, everywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, you name it. We got it there. So come check us out. Spread the love, everybody out there. It's Grumblings Media. We're starting a new thing. Let's get it done. All right, here we go. We've got the Cleveland Browns here, Joe. The Brownies. All right, Michael Hall Jr. here, their first pick here for them at 54 overall. You know, they were one of those teams that weren't fortunate enough to make it into the first round because, again, that's part of that that trade would they get Deshaun Watson. And this is some of the things that you've heard about post-draft, you know what I mean, is the fact that this now Deshaun Watson deal has finally come to pass. Now, the deal is finally done. Everybody has gotten what they have gotten from this deal. And right now, it doesn't look so good for Cleveland on this thing. Again, just because he can't even stay on the field.
Adam Schefter made it a big deal to complete the trade. In the draft, and was like, it is now official, everybody. The trade between the Browns and the Texans is now complete after this draft and this pick and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, dude, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's a completion of a trade. It's fine. So, I mean, everybody kind of making that like a real big deal in the draft and whatnot.
Oh, my God. Who the hell?
Thank you, Peter. Hey. Thank you for speaking up. But, yeah, all in all right, it's come full circle. Great. Let's move on. But I do like their first couple of picks for Cleveland. You know, D tackle Michael Hall. Michael Hall was kind of like a underrated D tackle coming out. A lot of people liked him, but some people didn't have him in that conversation with, you know, with Chris Jenkins and with maybe Brendan Fisk or whatnot. So I think he's a little bit underrated. I think he'll do well for Cleveland. Zach Zinter to me. A guy coming off of a major injury late in the season, and kind of derailed that Michigan run that he was going to be able to do with his teammates. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, very gifted offensive guard for them. He's going to do well. He's going to get healthy and definitely going to end up being a starter for Cleveland. One negative I'll say is that I wasn't completely excited for them to take Jamari Thrash, who definitely. It's not like he doesn't have talent. He does have talent. He can get open. But, again, Jim, you mentioned about it earlier in the show, inconsistent hands. It's going to frustrate fans. It's going to aggravate coaches. And I feel like that was kind of like one of these things, like unless he can get better at catching the football, it's going to be kind of like a missed pick. 2 years from now, we might be talking about it.
All right. We've got Back to the Stone Age.
I like it.
I like the name. Back to the Stone Age. Let's see what he has to say here. It seems like the Giants could have bluffed the Vikings into trading up to take McCarthy. Should they have? We're actually hearing, too, that, you know, it was Sean Payton, you know, it was taking claim for bluffing the Vikings into that, you know, like that, you know.
No, he's full of crap, bro. He might have tried, but he thinks he actually made it happen for them to trade up. But let's be honest, I don't think they traded up because they were worried about you trading up, you know what I mean, or taking them.
Right.
I really don't. I think they just wanted to make sure that no one else was going to trade up at them, like maybe like the Raiders, because they know that the Raiders were trying to trade up to get a quarterback. They weren't sure who they were going to go with. So that was one of the interested quarterbacks there. So I think all in all, Minnesota just wanted to make sure they got their player, got their guy, because quarterbacks were flying off the top 10 picks were like crazy with quarterbacks. So. Yeah.
They were, and I thought even they were able to sit back a little bit more and then make their shot, you know, and stuff. Because again, we were looking around that 4-5, you know, range or something like that, see if they were going to strike and make a trade or whatever. And then the pick was in. All of a sudden, like, oh, all right, they're chilling, you know, see where we're going. And then they finally pulled the trigger. And
going
then,
back to the Giants, I don't think Minnesota was ever going to entertain that because it would have cost so much more in compensation to pull that off that I don't think they were comfortable with. They're like, hey, wait a second. J.J. J.J. McCarthy could fall to us here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's possible that he slides down we don't have to go way up to the that pick at six and give up more than what we already have. So I think they were smart about it. They were disciplined about it, and it actually worked out in their favor.
Yeah, and I think the Giants did the right thing again. I mean, I've been on the Daniel Jones train and then, you know, teetering off, but then still back on and stuff. But it was still a question mark there at this time. When I was watching them, when they're on the clock, I'm like, do they do it or will they? I mean, the wide receiver's right there. You know, neighbors, you got to do it, right? So if they go and get quarterback, then you know, holy crap, they're ready for the reset here. And they're sold on, you know, Daniel Jones ain't the guy. But, you know, throughout the whole before the draft, they were saying, hey, you know, we were planning on him being the guy. And now they finally get him a number one weapon. You would hope, and you know, with what you've seen from his college tape, can be this guy that he has never had. Even the Giants haven't had, I said, even in a while.
Odell Beckham was the last,
one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and even he was really injury prone. So, I mean,
but
he
was really good.
A flash in the pan. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, Daniel Jones, though, has never been able to have that. I mean, Darius Slayton, who's even trying to say, hey, I love you guys. You know, you're going to bring, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to bring me back, you know, blah, blah. He is a sixth rounder. He had a decent year, 1 year. They're like, oh, that was cool. We got some value in that pick. And then you're kind of like, no, now we see why we drafted him where we did.
Let's just hope that this LSU product pans out more than Odell did, because both had tremendous talent, just like Neighbors does. And some people, even out of college, were saying he's a little bit of a diva. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see if that kind of character comes out in him now that he's been selected. But the other thing that was interesting with the Giants is that they were actively trying to trade up to get Drake May. It wasn't a secret. Mm-hmm. Like, as we got closer to the draft, we started hearing grumblings that, Giants are on the phone right now before even the draft starts. They're talking to the Patriots, possibly trying to get to that third spot. If they can pull it off, they're going with Drake May. And everybody kind of found that out. So that, to me, also tells me that they are done with Daniel Jones. They are looking to replace him. They just weren't able to do it this year. But next year, watch for them to be players in that quarterback market. Mm-hmm. It may be limited, but if they like somebody out of that draft class, they're going to yet again attempt to get a quarterback. So Daniel Jones isn't safe. I know that they can get out of his contract relatively soon.
Yeah.
And that might be type of the transition that we see, where maybe they move on from Jones next year in a trade to someone else or something of that nature. So Daniel Jones right now, safe. He's going to be the quarterback now that we know that they couldn't pull off that trade. So, but, man, it was a steal for the Giants at six to get Neighbors. Nobody anticipated him to be just falling down right to the Giants, and he definitely did, because the Chargers were picking at five.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, they don't have receivers. They got to take Neighbors, right? Like 100%. Well, Jim Harbaugh doesn't think like that. He doesn't value receivers in that light. So with his offense.
Yeah, you talked about that in the offseason. All right, talk about divas. Now here we are talking about the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, you know, plenty of them. And it's funny how now Elliott has come back home here now. Yes. That's the loaded backfield here. So, again, how much eating he likes to do. There's a lot of mouths to feed in that backfield, so we'll see where that pans out for everybody. But the Cowboys, we talked about it. Will they go for a flashy pick, or will they actually go fill one of those needs? And we said, you know, tackle, again, one of those needs that they need to do, because not only just age some of these guys, but then the injuries that they've had, even on this offensive line. At one point, this was one of the best offensive line, but as of late, because of injuries, and again, getting older at this point, they haven't really focused and tried to attack this here.
Right.
They're kind of going for those bigger, you know, wide receiver picks or whatever. Now they go and do this and get Tyler Guyton here for them. What do you think about the Dallas Cowboys here, Joe?
So for Dallas, I felt that they had a decent draft. I mean, especially early on. You look at, you know, like you just mentioned, Tyler Guyton. They needed a guy that could be a starter for them. What's interesting with Guyton is I wonder if they're going to move him to left tackle or keep him at right tackle, because you got Terrence Steele right now who's got that right tackle spot locked down. If you're going to ask Guyton to now move to the left, which he only played, I think, 1 year of, not as comfortable on the left side, don't think you want to do that to a rookie and kind of make him switch his stance and just throw him out there to the Wolves. So something's going to be interesting to watch for is Smith, who they have penciled at guard. He could play tackle. And until Tyler Guyton gets up to speed, he could just play left guard for them. So I wonder just, are they going to play musical chairs a little bit with that offensive line to get him in that lineup? That's kind of what I foresee. But again, I don't think he's ready yet. A little bit more of a developmental prospect to be that left tackle for them of the future. Other than that, Western Michigan DN Marshawn Nealand, I thought was a very, very good pick. And we talked about before the draft happened how don't be surprised if Dallas looks to fill a void that is going to come soon at that DN position. You know, we talk about DeMarcus Lawrence getting longer in the tooth, a little bit older, not productive as he used to be, especially carrying that big contract. Well, here's your answer. Marshawn Nealand will probably replace Dexter Lawrence. Cooper Beebe, a guard, love that pick for them, another offensive depth piece. After that, I feel like they were kind of just trying to throw some potential players after that round there in the third. So like the first few picks, after that, not extremely crazy with the rest of their selections.
Yeah. I mean, it's, like you said, they're trying to build up, you know, pieces of the defense. We weren't sure if they might go defensive back here early on. Mm-hmm. But again, offensive tackle, not a bad situation for them.
They definitely got offensive.
And they were able to help that out, which is a big need because, again, you invest in Dak Prescott. This is mm-hmm. your guy. You got to be able to keep him upright if you're going to have him moving forward.
Yep.
We've got another comment in the house with us tonight.
We got.
All right, we got W. Del Pilar's in with the house tonight.
All right.
He says, Daniel Jones, that bad, or is it the fact that he haven't had an offensive line and it's so long that I can't remember? And that's part of it, too. And how many years have they just drafted nonstop to try and fill those gaps? I remember even Will Hernandez, those guys and stuff. You know, and that was even a different regime that's in there now, trying mm-hmm. to help this offensive line out. And it's been – putrid still. I mean, so they it's not like they haven't tried, Joe. They just haven't really hit on some of these guys and made it happen here. Neil was there again. It looks fairly decent as a pick, but again, looks like he's having a little trouble with some of those guys, like, you know, those pass rushers getting off and getting that step off there. And we even talked about, do they decide to try to move him into the guard position and draft a right tackle or something like that, if that's a situation that they look at?
That's the thing, too, is like they did their homework through free agency. They shored up the offensive line and brought veteran free agents over to shore up that offensive line. So now there's not that much of a question with them going forward. They know what they have in their offensive linemen, what their capabilities are. You look at Jeremy Illuminor, who came over from the Raiders, a guy that can play any position on the offensive line minus center, but a guy that plays it super solid and super well. So he's not elite by any means, but again, this guy is very versatile, can play guard for you, can play tackle for you, and he plays it at a high level. So I think that was one of their biggest free agent acquisitions and a guy that's definitely going to show you that this offensive line isn't going to be as putrid, as you would say, this upcoming season. So, I mean, for them, like when we talk about Daniel Jones, there's pros and cons to Daniel Jones, and everybody knows that we've seen enough evidence. He's been there long enough to where you can – pick the cons out of his game, pick the pros out of his game. And that's why when you saw when they basically just had Jones and Saquon Barkley, no real receivers that one year, they were still able to get some wins that they probably shouldn't have been able to and utilize Barkley in the run game, in the pass game, Daniel Jones with his legs a lot, and that kind of kept defenses on edge. So fast forward that another season, two seasons ago, where they kind of tried to grab random receivers and threw them all together and an offensive line that still wasn't up to par, but they still went into the season like that and he struggled mightily. Now you come into this season where it seems like your offensive line is a lot more solid. You just drafted Neighbors, who's going to be a very explosive number one wide receiver for you. Now maybe you might be able to see a little bit different side of Daniel Jones, maybe a better side of him. Because if he doesn't get any better this year, then it's curtains for him.
Right. And I think it's a mix of a little bag of everything in a sense, though, too. Because look at the offense. I thought that the offense even was doing too many deeper routes to where your offensive line was bad. Daniel Jones had an average of 2 seconds to drop back and throw before the pressure was there.
Mm-hmm.
He got pressured 152 times last year, he's around averaging 30% of those plays. So he has no time, but all the routes are deeper. There's no other chance to dump it out to anybody.
Right.
And the wide receivers that you have, even on shorter routes, they just can't get open because they're not that good.
Well, the bottom line was that the offensive plays, like you mentioned, deeper routes, there was no outlet. So when you had Saquon in the backfield, how come you didn't have Saquon, instead of blocking, leak out in the flat and just wait for the football? If no one was open deep, then just, you know, drop it down below. So I feel like play calling definitely played a major part, especially last season. But I think you don't have to worry about that this year. The offensive line is definitely upgraded. You see that on paper. I know we're looking at it on the depth chart and all that, and you can say, oh, yeah, it looks great on paper. No, it really is quality free agents there. So I don't think you have to worry about the offensive line as much anymore. You got your big weapon in Neighbors. Now this comes down to Daniel Jones this year, because now you can't have any more excuses. You even got your head coach who's going to call the plays this year. I don't think it's going to be Mike Kafka. It's going to be the head coach who originally was calling the plays, which where you saw some success.
Yes.
So overall, this team is headed in a better direction this year. Now, I'm not saying they're going to compete for the division or anything, but what I'm saying is that you're going to see a better product on the field week in and week out.
All right, here we go. Let's go to the Denver Broncos now, Joe, the guy who, again, Sean Payton, we just talked about, he's taking claim here. Now, one quick question for me, even with Sean Payton now, which I think we've seen this with Belichick losing Brady and then to see him kind of do it on his own. Now that Sean Payton is not with the Saints, takes a year off, doesn't have that Drew Brees, but had like Russell Wilson, talked shit about the previous regime, and really hasn't done much better, a little better, obviously, but still, but it's Sean Payton. You've got that name behind who you are. If he can't get it done here, does that, I'm not going to go with the whole tarnish his legacy, but
no.
Is his head now getting so big and he's confident who he is, like he says, you know, if he cannot get Bo Nix on board and get him to work his offense and what it is, and he's failed this franchise, what do we say about Sean Payton after this?
Well, it's real simple. You know, whenever you draft a quarterback with a newer regime or a new regime, that quarterback is tied to that regime. So they believe that Bo Nix is their starter of the future. So it's all going to depend on Bo Nix right now. There's a lot of pressure being picked in the first round for any quarterback, whether you're number one overall or 12. But I think this is going to be one of those. I think it's a good marriage between Sean Payton and Bo Nix, because Bo Nix had a lot of similarities of Drew Brees-esque type of play and the style of offense that he ran in college. So I feel like with Sean Payton, it's going to fit his offense to a T. So I think throughout the whole draft process, this was where Bo Nix was going to go. This is what the Denver Broncos were hoping for. And it got a little hairy when you saw all these quarterbacks go earlier, and you're like, wow, the sixth quarterback is Bo Nix, and do the Jets take him in front of us? Like, you know, and planning a future without Rodgers and grooming him that way, like the Packers used to do. So that was a little scare for them, but sure enough, he ends up falling right to them. And they just make the selection. It was pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they kind of – they were hoping at least that this would play out this way, and it did. So they're very happy right now. And I think as far as Sean Payton goes, he's always had an ego, even with New Orleans Saints. That's why you saw him go for two sometimes that were, you know, just kind of like, in a sense, arrogant, aggressive play calling. But I think he'll have that as soon as Bo Nix gets it all together and learn the playbook. I think you're going to see that kind of execution, that aggressiveness play out in Denver.
Yeah, and again, I understand the running ability with Bo Nix and still and then Armstrong again. I think if you can clean up some of the mistakes again and not seeing some of the defense, some of the guys that are open, it seemed to, in college he missed a lot of those opportunities there and kind of go into the wrong read and not the right one right away. If he could figure that out, and the best way is having this type of coach here, you know, the mastermind that is Sean Payton, to help him out here. So
the problem,
I think that's going to be a good fit.
The problem with that in college is that they're instructed to do certain plays a certain way. So they might not have to look at the fourth read. They might just be like, oh, you look at one and two, and if they're not open, then you got to go. You got to get out of harm's way. So there were some offenses college-wise that they predetermine what they want the quarterback to do. So in a certain situation, that's why you might have seen Bo Nix not throw it to a guy that looked wide open or was wide open, mm-hmm. But that wasn't what they wanted him to do. You know what I mean? Maybe that wasn't it because he needed to get out of his hands.
Some of it was in the red zone. I mean, and if you're in the red zone, you got to make those things happen when it's there. Because if you don't, and then you're not scoring. The difference between
I don't think that's a problem with him at the next level.
I think
because of Sean Payton's offense, it's all about 2 seconds, get rid of it. So I think you won't have an issue there.
All right, moving on to the Detroit Lions. Wow, we're only an hour in, and we're only on the Lions.
I just have to say, Oregon wide receiver Troy Franklin that got selected by Denver. That is one pick that I really wasn't high on. A lot of people were surprised in how far he fell. I wasn't. I'm not a big fan of Troy Franklin because of his light weight as a wide receiver. He's tall, has long arms and everything, but guy's light as a feather. I think with those physical corners at the next level, they're going to be able to push him around a little bit when it comes to going up for the football. And then inconsistent hands on top of that. So really wasn't too thrilled with that. But here, this is a guy that they believe in, and we'll see if he pans out.
Yeah, I think one of our guys, Joe Pratt, had said the same kind of opinion here about Franco, too, as well, a couple of other times. We're on to the Lions again. Lions were able to get Terry and Arnold again. Once we got to the end of that draft towards the last, 30 or so around towards the end, and again, it was – if you're looking for defense, it was there. So whatever you wanted to grab, it was there, and these guys were able to do that and get some stuff done here. And they got two defensive backs here for them, too, which helps out in that backfield for them. So I think for the Lions, they only got better. You know, I mean, for a team that was just shy of getting to the big game, you know, I think they did a really tremendous job last year. And I think they can only build from that, what they've done here in the draft.
Yeah, love the Terry and Arnold pick. And the fact that they got him at 24th overall is pretty humorous because definitely a number one stud at corner. Going to be a great corner for them at the next level. Starter right away. But one corner that I'm not excited about is their second-round pick in Ennis Rakestraw Jr., guy who does have the length and everything, kind of physical, but sometimes a little too physical. I feel like at the next level, much like a Joey Porter when he came out of the draft, we thought penalties galore, and that's kind of how it played out. So I think Rakestraw might struggle a little bit. And at the next level where you're playing with everybody is a big boy, I don't think he's going to do extremely well like I think the Lions are hoping for.
All right, next we've got the Green Bay Packers here. In the first round, they go get Jordan Morgan here, offensive tackle. And they've just built up a little bit, too, on the defensive side of the ball, which we saw last year. Again, the defense slide a little bit. You know, previous year before, it looked like they were – zoned right in. They had Preston Smith going and Rashawn Gary and stuff. But last year, it looks like they took a little bit of a step back, but the offense was able to push up through. Now they've made a couple different personnel changes here on offense, too, as well. And one thing when we talked about, especially when we had Roderick on here, do they go offensive line? Because we had spoke about, age, injuries, the same type of thing, almost like the Dallas Cowboys have kind of gone through. And lo and behold, that's what they do to try and help Jordan Love out here, so he isn't pressured as much. But despite all that last season and some of that pressure, he really took the pressure and it really performed well for them.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about their draft is that I wasn't a huge fan of Jordan Morgan coming in. He's definitely going to have to kick into guard at the next level. He already has short limbs, which I'm not a huge fan of at the next level because you got all these guys that are best of the best, all have length. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge, I think, for Morgan. But he is a technician. So it's not like he's not a decent offensive lineman. He's a very good offensive lineman, technical-wise. But I just think at the next level, he may or may not struggle with his short arms and his reach. So definitely going to be a guard. So I'm a little hesitant to give them a very good grade, especially on their first pick.
What do you think about them getting Pratt on this for a quarterback?
But their second pick, I'll get to that, but their second pick, Edrin Cooper, I think is a home run. This guy's going to come in and start right away at linebacker. He still needs a little bit of work and refinement, but I'll tell you this right now, this kid is explosive, he's fast, he flies all over the football field, and a great tackler. So, and I also think he could develop into a nice coverage linebacker for them. And we'll get to Michael Pratt. Michael Pratt, not a huge fan at all. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I know there's the consensus likes Michael Pratt and maybe his development down the road and what have you, but I just didn't see enough on tape to give me confidence that I think he could develop to be that. I think his best case scenario, in my opinion, is that he's a career backup. But Pratt, I don't see him developing as a starter at any point in his career.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, if you look at their depth chart here for quarterbacks, again, they didn't really have anybody else there either. So, I mean, I guess they get Pratt for that situation. But I think if you're Green Bay and you were where you were last year and you try to position yourself to win, if Jordan Love goes down, I don't really trust any of these other guys to get you to the playoffs, though. At least hold the seat warm until Jordan Love possibly can come back. I don't know why they didn't think about trying to get just one of these veterans to kind of fill that gap.
And they still could. They could still sign a free agent quarterback that's out there that they think that could at least, you know, band-aid the situation and kind of keep them in the running type of deal. But a lot of those quarterbacks, maybe Ryan Tannehill.
Tannehill.
To me, that would be a good signing for Green Bay right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the draft has transpired, we all know how it fell up, how it went down. Now it's to the point where, like, you signed your undrafted free agents, and now it's like the free agents that are left over, you might be able to bring in one or two of them if you want to fill that 90-man roster up and give them an opportunity to maybe earn their spot. So Ryan Tannehill makes a lot of sense. I feel like he's the best available quarterback as a free agent right now. So I think it would be a smart idea because that way you have a veteran presence as your backup, a guy that can run that offense and still has that mobility like Jordan Love that he can get out of harm's way.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So here, let's go to the Houston Texans now, Joe. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any picks to go again because of that trade that they did too. So they had their first pick as a number.
They traded it away
overall. Yeah.
So they traded it to the Vikings and they got multiple mm-hmm. picks in the middle rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. they started that off with Kamari Lassiter, a corner that I do like. I think he is a very instinctual corner, but if you're going to put him on an island, I think that's going to be a mistake. Not the fastest corner in the draft, to say the least. It was in the high 4.6s in terms of his 40-yard dash. Not as quick, but, man, is this kid smart. He knows how to play the position. It's almost like he's like has a linebacker mentality mm-hmm. in terms of being able to read the offense, read routes and how they're going to happen, and react to them very quickly. So that's the part of his game where he's going to excel at the next level, where I feel like he's going to always put himself in the best possible position to either make a play or disrupt that football. So Lassiter, I do like him. I'm not in love with him, but I do think he has talent to be a starter at the next level. Other than that, when you look at the rest of their draft, they just kind of filled not only needs, but they also got value for their picks. Cade Stover, tight end at Ohio State, a guy who's very physical, who's going to be able to block for them extremely well, who can mm-hmm. also go out for passes, a little limited in terms of receiver, but still can get the job done. Blake Fisher, tackle from Notre Dame. I think it was kind of a steal for them because Blake Fisher, if he stayed one more year at Notre Dame next season, we're talking about this kid of being a top five tackle. So immense value for Blake Fisher, guy that could insert right away if you need him to. But other than that, you got yourself a chess piece that can just kind of slide into his role for future years. So overall, I think they did a really good job. The second half of the draft, not really keen on it because a lot of those players, it's not like somebody slid so far down into the sixth round where you're like, oh, my God, he's there, and they took him. So overall, Texans did a bang-up job. They killed it with addressing needs and value.
Right, and when you talk about Cade Stover, again, former Ohio State Buckeye, too, played with C.J. Stroud, where Stroud even leaned on him a little bit, too, at times. So to get reunited here, too, guy he trusts at the tight end, mm-hmm. what better situation mm-hmm. for him here, too. So that only helps them in that situation. So I think that was a good pickup for them as well.
Right.
The Colts, that night we heard a lot of different things. They might be movers and shakers. You know, again, Odunze was all over the ESPN and everywhere else.
Everything was being talked about Odunze and Brock Bowers.
Yes.
That's what the two names that kept popping up.
It was pretty crazy. And then nobody made that move, you know.
Nothing happened.
They didn't, though. But in the 15th overall pick, like Atu Latu, they're the ones that grabbed him, too. The defensive end, you know, good pass rusher even for them. So a lot of people were high on him over top of a lot of different guys. And lo and behold, he goes there. And it's cool for Indianapolis because they've been missing some of that guy, some of that type of dudes. You know, they've tried the Forrest Buckner, you know, situations here and there.
He's a D-tackle, though.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, trying to get some of these guys to get pressure and good defensive guys. You know, so they needed one of these types of players for their team.
They needed a guy to pair up with Kwity Paye. Mm-hmm. And they drafted Kwity Paye in the first round, and he's been an immense talent, has done very well for them. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to match him up with Laiatu Latu, which I think is a good idea. The only issue I have with Latu is I kind of had him sliding either end of first round or even into early second round because of his injury. He has a major neck injury that he just came back from, has been cleared to play. But the funny story is that the first doctor he went to wouldn't clear him to play football. Then he went to another doctor, and the doctor says, oh, yeah, you're good. You know, so it's like he mm-hmm. So that kind of gives me a little concern, a little red flag. Like, is he ready or is he not ready? Should he even be on the football field? So there's those major health concerns for a lot of teams, and that's why I felt like he went to 15 very easily because nobody was going to touch him with a 10-foot pole. So mm-hmm. with the Colts here, yes, they get an immense talent. Hopefully this kid can stay healthy. Hopefully nothing bad happens to him. I wish him all the best, and it would really be an awesome sight to see with him in a Colts uniform teaming up with Kwity Paye, terrorizing quarterbacks in the backfield. Now we talk about Adonai Mitchell. Here he is with their second pick, Adonai Mitchell. They get themselves a much-needed weapon opposite Michael Pittman Jr. Alec Pierce, I feel like, still hasn't really panned out to be what they were hoping him to be. He's going to most likely stay in the slot. But they also have Downs too. You know, Downs, he's definitely a gifted weapon there. So Alec Pierce might actually find himself on the bench after this selection, where Adonai can kind of take the roof off the top of a defense and so forth. So overall, they had some good offensive line depth. One of my favorite centers in this draft was Tanner Bortolini, mm-hmm. For obvious reasons. Yeah, the Italians, eh? Mm-hmm. But other than that, like they got some solid picks later in the draft. I like the Anthony Gould pick, Oregon State wide receiver. So that was also a nice selection there. So Colts, they another team that just like everybody else, it seems like they all had solid drafts, and they are another one as well.
All right. We got another comment here from William Del Pilar is in the house. He says, if we have time to go back, well, what about, he wants to ask about Caleb Williams here. We can just touch on this real quick. We don't really have time to go back, but we will do it though, you know, because we have the same, I think, opinion on this one. I think everybody else here, at least William as well. He goes, how can the guy become a franchise quarterback when it's a leadership position? The kid was in his mama's arms wailing like a crybaby here. pink nails. He also is selfish, mm-hmm. leaving one college for another to prop up his NFL status, draft status, and not quite the team player I envisioned. How far off is my take?
I don't think it's far off. I think it's in the realm of some of the red flags that other people see throughout the league. And when you are a polarizing figure coming out of college, like Caleb Williams was, there's a lot of attention involved, and, mm-hmm. and people kind of follow and see a lot of different, you know, almost like they get a little bit of a peek behind the curtain with what you are. Everyone's paying attention to you. So it's like a magnifying glass. Any little move that he made, it was documented. It was video was taken, mm-hmm. photographs were taken. So like when you're painting your nails before games and it says FU on your nails, like, is that what you want a leader to show? You want a guy that's going to be there through the tough times and the good times and keep everybody level-headed. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see the leadership qualities that maybe the Chicago Bears saw. I don't know. Maybe that's why the Bears are always picking in the top end of the draft. It could be something to do with that. Mm-hmm. But
sit down.
Caleb Williams to me is just one big red flag, and it's not because of his gameplay. It's because of the other parts. It's quarterbacking. It's being a leader. It's being a guy that, you know, no matter what, you're going to be there for your guys. You're going to be able to get, you know, sometimes receivers struggle. They drop a football that was for a first down. They come back to the huddle. They're pissed. And you got to be that guy to be like, yeah. yo, don't worry about it. Next play, yeah, I got
you. Again.
You know, we're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. So you see leadership qualities with Patrick Mahomes like that, mm-hmm. where Caleb Williams, and that's kind of the match that everyone wants to make is compare him with Mahomes. And if that's the case, he's not even close to the leader right, that Mahomes was, even coming out of college. So with the very simplistic offense that Caleb Williams was running in college, I think that's going to be a huge hurdle at the next level. He's going to have to be able to go through progressions, which he's never been asked to do in college. So, and that's kind of like my biggest thing with him is I haven't seen him do everything as a quarterback, let alone lead. And when you go through a tough loss, like William just mentioned, but you're not only like, I get it, you're sad, you're upset at the end of the game, you're a little pissed, and you let your emotions come out a little bit, but to curl up in a ball and hysterically cry, mm-hmm. like it's the worst thing that ever happened, and you just had a tough loss, as a leader, you should be with your teammates. You should be in a huddle. You should be praying. You should be encouraging other guys, like, hey, my bad, guys. We're going to get this thing right. Don't worry. Next week, whole different story. You know what I mean? Show some leadership qualities there. So William is kind of right in that aspect where I feel that there was some caution to the wind with Caleb Williams, unlike what the consensus felt like.
He goes home now to mommy, and he gets reprimanded, and that's the end. Sorry, mommy.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's move on now to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yes, sir.
So we're on the same page with that one, Wilm. Shout out to you.
Right.
Jacksonville Jaguars, Brian Thomas Jr., we were wondering when this guy might go to. We were talking about mm-hmm. it. I know there's Bills fans on the draft night, too, also saying, hey, yeah, right. who are we going to grab? You know, they were so excited. Yeah. They're like, we're going to grab this receiver if it's there. Yeah. Blah, blah. And they just kept moving back.
We even had a Bills fan comment on the live and said, oh, do you think we could get Brian Thomas? And I'm like, dude, you're at 28.
Yeah.
We still got to get through all these other picks. Like,
right.
I didn't see it happening, especially with Jaguars. They were mm-hmm. one of those teams that could go wide receiver, could go corner, mm-hmm. and they went with the wide receiver.
Yeah, and it ended up being Brian Thomas. And again, there was a couple of different ones we talked about. Roderick brought up a few. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So again, something they needed too, because again, they used to have Calvin Ridley, not now. So I needed to fill a void there too for wide receiver and help out Trevor Lawrence. Because again, mm-hmm. you know, if he stays healthy here, get him some more weapons here to help that offense out to get it going. Back to the playoffs where they were that previous year before last.
Yeah, the Jaguars typically got a high grade from a lot of people mm-hmm. Right after this draft. To me, it's like all their selections are boom or bust.
Mm-hmm.
There's no like clear cut, definitely going to be a starter at the next level, or at least it is like definite he's going to come in, and maybe after a year he's going to be the number one guy, going to be a big contributor. My thing is a lot of these picks, like you know Mason Smith from LSU, Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU, it's like Jaguars were only going to the LSU Pro Day.
LSU.
And it was like, we found enough players at LSU that I think we're good for the draft. And you saw them take Thomas, Smith. You also see them take Jordan Jefferson, who's a nose tackle for LSU. So kind of hilarious in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, even Jerrion Jones from Florida State, Javon Foster from Missouri, a tackle. All these names to you guys might not sound like much, but all of these guys are guys with talent, but they are literally every single one of them that is a boom or a bust. They're either going to be a starter-worthy caliber player or they're going to be a player that might not be last long in the NFL. So I think it's kind of like a risky draft for the Jaguars. This is probably the second straight year that they've done a draft like this where they go with boom or bust picks, hoping for more boom than bust, obviously. But again, very risky type of draft. And we'll see if it all pans out for them, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, along with some of the moves they made in free agency, getting Mac Jones, stuff like that for depth, you know, in case Trevor Lawrence goes down. And we'll see what happens with Mac Jones. It's funny to see that he now potentially can be this backup, you know, career backup quarterback now.
And the Jaguars have already announced that they have declined his fifth-year option. So if they don't re-sign him mm-hmm. or don't choose to, he's going to be a free agent yet again, gets his choice to go somewhere.
Right. So maybe, again, maybe in preseason he could perform well, and that's already talking about some trade talks or something like that.
And we'll get to Mac Jones.
Best option for him.
We'll get to Mac Jones later on in the show because we are going to review the 2021 draft and see how everybody did in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps. I mean, we're getting on an hour and a half right now, but we'll see how it goes. It's Kansas City Chiefs now, Joe. They got graded an A, you know, on NFL.com. Xavier Worthy, you talked about this pick. You like the fact, you know, the speed when we get that, you know, that, you know, and maybe that's what the Chiefs were kind of going for, but he wasn't one of your top, I think, you know, wide receivers on your list. So what do you think about the Chiefs and what they did here in this situation?
They're trying to duplicate a Tyreek Hill, and you can't. Tyreek Hill was not just God's gift of speed to the NFL world. He also has tremendous acceleration, can be at full speed in two or three strides, and is physical. Like, he's built like a tank as a wide receiver. So when you compare him to, like, Xavier Worthy, where Worthy's faster, there's no doubt about it, ran a 4.2 140, broke the scouting combine record in terms of speed. So definitely has acceleration, definitely has top-end speed. But what he doesn't have is consistent hands. He doesn't have the body, the physical build to withstand punishment at the next level, not let alone being bump and run coverage. So physical corners, if they're smart and you see this guy line up outside, you know what they're going to do with him. He's going to try to beat you deep. And if you get up in his face and jam him, you could probably send him flying, first of all. And second of all, you knock him off his route. You slow him up and disrupt the timing there between Mahomes and him. So to me, I'm not as excited about Xavier Worthy. I love the, obviously you can't teach speed and he has plenty of it. That's the exciting part of it. And I think where what you're going to see with Worthy is the fact that Andy Reid is going to have to do some homework and how to figure out some formation, some motion, do some motion with Worthy and kind of get him free, like free releases in the offense. Because if he can kind of do that for him, which I expect to happen, then you might be able to utilize his talent that way.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Las Vegas Raiders here, Joe. Some people are surprised about the pick when they go and actually get Brock Bowers here. Mm-hmm. A lot of speculation that night was that the Jets were all about, you know, Brock Bowers, you know, but we saw that did not play out that way for them. And the fact that where the Raiders are here too, they already have a tight end in their system there that a lot of people like here. So then when they get Brock Bowers now here on the opposite side, they're kind of like, okay, what? But hey, now you got bookend, tight ends, but this is a receiving threat on top of it too. So it's almost having another wide receiver for Aiden O'Connell. I mean, if you're going to go with that route.
Yeah. So for what the Raiders did is all the quarterbacks were gone. Like all the starting caliber quarterbacks were all taken in front of them. They were the girl at the dance that got left behind. You know what I mean? And
always the bridesmaid, yes, never the bride.
That's right.
Bro.
So what they ended up doing, and it was interesting, they went BPA. They went best player available with this pick. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there was a lot of teams that were shocked that he even slid down to 13. They thought for sure that he'd be a top five pick because that's where he was ranked in terms of value. But, man, they grabbed themselves a blue chip player in Brock Bowers. And even though he's got that tight end tag, this kid is unreal. Like, he can play the tight end position, but he also can play in the slot as a wide receiver. Like, that's the crazy part, is he has such versatility, it's crazy. And you saw at Georgia where they were able to utilize him on jet sweeps. They used him in short game, intermediate game, deep game, as a running back at times. Like, there was a lot of things that they did with this kid. They were very creative, and it displayed his full talents. I think at this level in the NFL for Bowers, as long as the Raiders utilize him like that, kind of like a chess piece in the offense, moving him around, creating mismatches, I think this kid's going to be electric. But if they use him as just a prototypical tight end at the next level and just say, oh, we're going to do double tight end sets with Michael Mayer and Bowers, still going to be productive, but you definitely need to utilize him as a whole. And then for them to get another guy that I was super excited about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Center/guard Jaxon Powers-Johnson. I was elated with this pick.
Yeah,
I could not believe
it. Right when it happened, yeah, again, I was like, right. You got your guy. Talked about it in the first round with Roderick and stuff
exactly.
Like that, too.
So I could not believe that he was in the second round. I thought for sure he was going to be a first-round pick, but here he is, and the Raiders were able to get him. After that, I think as far as disappointments go, I think the third round is kind of really what disturbed me. Now, who knows? I don't know DJ Glaze. I mean, I was trying to do as much homework as I could, but I was unaware of DJ Glaze and what he could be at the next level. Some people viewed it as a reach. Then you ask other people, and they're like, oh, no, that's a solid pick. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. I just don't think in terms of value, because it looked like they were going best player available for the first two picks. And I'm like, all right, round three, we're going to take a corner. We're going to take, like, maybe Kyrie Jackson or someone else that has good value. And they took this guy, and I'm like, who's this guy? You know what I mean? Why would you? So other than that, they managed to get, like, I feel like a guy that is just a plain football player in Tommy Eichenberg. Got to like that pick later on. Overall, they had a solid draft. But, man, when you were sitting there and Brock Bowers was there, but also Talese Fuaga, tackle, a big need, and also the value was there. I know, I understand going with Bowers because you viewed him as a higher value, but, man, you could have really locked in this right side of the offensive line had you draft Fuaga and then able to get JPJ as your second pick. So that's kind of like my own critique on them. But overall, I think it's a decent draft. They didn't hit a home run, but they did okay. They did good.
Yeah, definitely. I think a home run, I think, for me, at least in the beginning couple drafts here, for me, is the Los Angeles Chargers. I like the first two picks for them. I like Joe Alt. They were able to get that tackle that they wanted to help protect Justin Herbert and Ladd McConkey. This guy is one of the guys that Roderick really liked, and he thought he was going to get drafted right away in that first round when wide receivers were there. And I looked at some tape of this guy, too. And what I like about him is how shifty he is. There's a couple of plays I saw where he got the ball kind of in a dump off kind of situation, and he just made plays with his legs. And I really like that, how shifty he was a little bit here too. And I think that's only going to help out this offense for them.
Yeah. And there was a lot of receivers in this draft. They were all like that. They were all shifty in their own way. Right. Ladd McConkey to me is one of the best route runners in this draft. Mm-hmm. So he's going to get open. He's very quick, just like Jim mentioned. But he has solid hands, is physical. You look at his size, you're like, he's a little guy. No, but he's pretty physical. He definitely going to fight for extra yardage, make people miss and what have you. Those were two easy picks for me. Mm-hmm. After that, I feel like my favorite pick would probably be Junior Colson, linebacker. To get him in the third round, I thought was kind of surprising to me. I thought he was going to go a little earlier than that. But they managed to get him, another Michigan guy. And, what's this? Later on, their last pick was a Michigan wide receiver. Mm-hmm. And, Cornelius Johnson.
Surprise.
So the joke was that Jim Harbaugh was going to try to grab every Michigan player. But the Rams in the third round took, They took the running back there.
Blake Corum,
yeah. So I feel like he was pretty upset after that pick was made.
Yeah, I bet he was. You're like, oh, man.
Who let this happen?
My fantasy team.
I want a name. Who let this happen in this room? Why didn't you tell me?
Who leaked that information? Damn you. Oh, man. Yeah, so, I mean, I thought overall they did a lot of good things to help out that team. You know what I mean? We'll see what happens because, again, I don't think it could be as worse as it was last year.
No.
Justin Herbert looked terrible. And, yes, he was injured a little bit, but, I mean, it was his left hand, not his throwing hand. So hopefully he stay healthy.
Right.
And let's see what happens. Let's see what this Jim Harbaugh offense looks
like. What's it going to look like?
With these guys here.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. You know, they ended up taking receiver later. I thought a steal for the Chargers was Brendan Rice.
Yeah.
As late as they took him. Mm-hmm. The guy's not a bad receiver. He's obviously, his father taught him well.
Yeah.
He runs routes. He's a solid, you know, pass catcher. More of a physical wide receiver, like a possession-type wide receiver, but I still think he can get the job done. Mm-hmm. So I kind of expect Rice to maybe even be a starter in his first year is what I'm looking forward to.
All right, now moving on to the Rams that you talked about here. They were the ones that grabbed Blake Corum in the third round. And first, their first pick here, Jared Verse, again, another good pickup for them. Defensive end, missing Aaron Donald this season again because of retirement, so they needed somebody here to get some pressure. Yes, and he was a D-tackle, but he was the one that got that pass pressure here for them.
They go with D-tackle, though, in the second pick with Braden Fisk. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, to me, is an underrated draft pick. I some people were criticizing Fisk because, he has short arms, but he makes up for it. He's super quick. His hand placement is like elite. His hand fighting is elite.
Right.
So I think at the next level, I don't have any concerns with Fisk. I think he's going to be a very, very good starter for the Rams along with Verse. Now, Verse, I had him as my number one DN coming out. Mm-hmm. I just love the size, the acceleration off the line of scrimmage, the power that this guy generates. Now, what you have to work with him at the next level is he needs to learn some more freaking pass rush moves. Yeah, yeah. This guy only he loves to go to the bull rush every single time. And it's like, dude, do you know how electric you could be if you just learned that other part of your game? So we talked about it numerous times, you know, on our show that coaches in college, they're there to coach to win championships.
Yes, yep.
They're not there to coach them up to make it to the NFL and become successful at the NFL level. So this is a job for the NFL coaches. They're gladly to take on the challenge. I'm pretty sure that they're going to get this job done, and Verse will be a menace for years to come.
Moving on to the Miami Dolphins. Again, first pick that they're able to get here, the 21st overall, Chop Robinson, linebacker here, helping out that defense. I know you like Chop Robinson here for the Dolphins, but what do you think about these guys and how they can progress? You said, again, looks like they're doing what they're sticking to. Mike McDaniels, I guess he just likes speed, right, Joe?
Well, I mean, here's the thing is for Chop Robinson, he's an interesting type of talent. I had him actually falling out of the first round. Because when you watched him on tape, yes, he was very explosive. Yes, he has top-end speed. And he can literally just run around tackles at the college level. So that kind of is a concern for me. So, like, how good are you with your pass rush moves when the tackles are actually getting into your body and trying to lock you up? Can you disengage? Can you break off that? Can you do a different style of pass rush move to kind of throw their hands off and make that bend around the corner? I think he's athletic enough to do that. He has tremendous bend. But I think with Miami, it seems like their mantra is speed all the time, regardless of position. Mm. Wide receiver, even tackles sometimes are like Patrick Paul is one of the most athletic, gifted tackles in this draft. And he's going to end up coming in and possibly carving out a starting job for himself. They did a very solid job here throughout the draft. Jalen Wright, another running back that some people viewed as number one, maybe number two in terms of the draft class. But overall, they just got over and over and over. They got speed and they got value for every single position. So the only concern I have about Chop is that he looks a lot to me like Vic Beasley of old. He looks like that quick, twitchy speed guy. But when you get your hands on him, I feel like he's going to struggle at the next level, especially in run plays. Just going to get flat out blocked. If he can get around him, that's a different story. But if these linemen get their hands on him at all and just kind of push him out of the way, I think it's over then.
All right, moving on to the Minnesota Vikings here. Again, we'd heard about the talks about them. When were they going to trade up? What were they going to do with these picks here? And they were able to get their pick here at the 10th overall, J.J. McCarthy. And as you look here in this graphic here, again, history was made. Six quarterbacks taken here. There's McCarthy as one of them. Again, we'll get to Jaden Daniels and those guys here, but it was precedent was set in the 2024 NFL draft. So we'll see. We'll see what even this NFL does with it, with these quarterbacks. And we get to look at this a couple of years down the road, and we'll see. Was it worth it taking all these quarterbacks in the first round, Joe? But Minnesota, J.J. McCarthy, a lot of people even question if he was the right type of guy to even get, to be. Yes, I understand. I talked about this with Roderick even, too, because it was nice to pick his brain coming in out of a scout's point of view and then also draft room. So, cause he was one of those guys that also said about, well, he's a winner. So then I had the perfect opportunity to ask him, well, what does that exactly mean? I mean, I hear this, well, this guy's a winner and this and this. And he pretty much kind of narrows it down to the fact that he's got leadership roles. You know what I mean? This guy is kind of a leader. He gathers everybody around. He's got the smarts there and he's calm and cool and collect and he's got it all together. That's kind of what he's getting at here in making it, yes, I understand that Michigan won, a lot of games. I get that. It's not just that they win all the time. It is the fact that he has just got it all together, calm, cool, collect, and he is a leader, which I think was nice coming in right after with Kirk Cousins, because I feel Kirk Cousins is a leader too, So I think it's a great situation for him to go to.
For J.J. Watt, the thing that kind of stuck out in my mind, or J.J. McCarthy, I'm going to make that mistake throughout the whole entire show, it seems like. But no, McCarthy, the deal with him is what kind of surprised me is the fact that teams were coming back after the combine and after having like small 15-minute interviews with this guy, they came blown away because of his smarts, his football IQ, what he was able to kind of tell them in the meetings and distinguish like defensive plays, NFL caliber defensive formations that were presented to him. They presented about 8 of them, and the kid got every single one correct, being able to pick what formation it was, and they asked why, and there was one in particular where he's like, oh, well, he started to notice fine details where, like, oh, the safety has his heel up, so he's going to backpedal out of this, which is going to turn this into a cover 3. So things of that nature where he was able to pick up minor details right off the cuff and nail it, just flat out was a phenomenal interviewable player here. So J.J. McCarthy, to me, kind of surprised a lot of teams early on in this process, and then teams started to do a little bit more deeper digging on him in terms of, like, utilizing the limited tape that they had on his throws, but still being able to make the distinction that, yeah, this kid's got not only leadership, not only him to manage a team or players, get along with players, but, man, he's great on the field, he's great off the field, and that's really what you're looking for in a franchise quarterback. We'll work on everything else that he has to work on, but he's got the mobility, he's got the size, he's got the arm strength, and you even saw doses of accuracy at times too. So great pick by the Vikings, even though they moved up one spot to 10 with the Jets. They wanted to make sure they secured that spot. And who knows? Maybe there was a reason for that move. We didn't think the Jets were going to take him, and it sounds like they weren't. But at the same time, the reason to move up one spot is maybe the Raiders had something. Maybe the Broncos or the Raiders had, you know, were on the phones with the Jets about trading up to possibly get J.J. McCarthy. So that'll be something interesting that hopefully comes out later on is the reason why they moved up one spot. Mm-hmm. But all in all, they get their quarterback, great for them, and they also trade up in the lower half of the first round and get their pass rusher in Dallas Turner, replacing the veteran that they had prior.
Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, amazing. I think that's amazing value there for them. And now you have to teach the kid. We talked about Versen, about how he needs to learn pass rush moves. Turner, though he has elite acceleration and speed and the physicality and the strength and all that in the limbs, he just doesn't know how to play that DN position through and through. You know, he's not that comfortable yet at that position. So he needs to a little bit more coaching up at the next level. But again, a kid with great value there. And you saw that throughout the rest of their draft too. The Vikings did not really reach on many of their picks at all. You know, so a lot of them are developmental after that point. Kyrie Jackson, very physical, tall corner, long limbs. He's more of a man-to-man guy, so I'm curious, like, what the Vikings are going to do defensively with him. And then after that, they just got guys that they could develop. So overall, I think Minnesota did an excellent job.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny when you talk about, you know, guys that sign in free agency prior to this, they have a game plan. They're like, all right, I can do something here. I got a chance now to showcase my skills. And now when the draft shows up, and this, I mean, Minnesota goes hard for this. So you kind of feel for Sam Darnold and things like that, you know, for these guys.
Well, here's the thing. There's no guarantee. Though,
right? Yeah.
There's no guarantee maybe that J.J. is going to be a starter his rookie year. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole reason why they signed Sam Darnold, because they wanted insurance and didn't want to have to force the rookie if he's not ready to go out there. So Darnold, and that's the other thing too, is Darnold's got a chip on his shoulder right now. Yep. He wants to prove to everybody that he can start in this league and be a good starter. So there's definitely some drive between both quarterbacks. Both quarterbacks want that job. It's going to be very exciting to see in training camp that whole quarterback battle.
There we go. We've got Back to the Stone Age is in the house again with us tonight. He says, yo, McCarthy is a real man. Just win, baby. Should have been a Raider. R.I.P. Big Al, or Big A, right? No, Big Al. There you go. Oh, yeah. Yep, there you go. He's a Raiders fan, Joe. How about that? One of your brethren is in the house tonight. So
that's
check it out.
There's an awful lot of us.
Yeah, there is. There is. So
worldwide.
And yes, I mean, you liked McCarthy.
I did like
him. On your list.
I had him higher than those people.
Yes, yes, you did. And we've heard from Raider Nation a lot prior to the draft about possibly getting a quarterback, but which one?
They want
a few, because again, I think they're not exactly sold on Aiden O'Connell and things, so I think they expect different.
I think the idea was going into it for them is that they would love to get Jaden Daniels. That was their like number one guy.
Yeah. It's a dream scenario.
And I think they could have done it, but it would have cost everything you had basically just to move up to get a quarterback when you have a lot of other needs that you need to address. So realizing that wasn't a realistic option, they instead were kind of honing in on maybe Michael Penix falling to them. Well, that didn't work out either. So all in all, what's done is done. No quarterback this year for the Raiders, and we move on.
I'm sorry. Move along. There we go. All right. Now we've got the New Orleans Saints, Joe Talisi Fuaga. Again, we talked about this guy earlier on, too. And again, filling needs, helping Derek Carr stay on top for him too. And again, defensive back Kool-Aid McGinstry too, another pickup for them, which is really good. And for them in the third round, Spencer Rattler right there. You know, lo and behold, you heard averaging maybe third round for this guy. You know, we'll see what happens. Take
third
a swing.
Or fourth.
And a lot of people even kind of connecting dots and blah, blah, blah. Even, you know, people were like, Derek Carr, you know, he's going to try. I even heard, like, I think it was fake news about the fact that Derek Carr wants to go back to the Raiders now because they drafted Spencer Rattler and stuff. But I would pump the brakes on that whole situation there, too, because, again, very raw. He's got a lot of things to straighten out, I think, for him. But Derek Carr, very talented quarterback with a smart mind, you know, for the game too. So I think he would be great to work with them too as well to help develop him on top of it and be the starter.
So for this pick, what's interesting is that I think the Saints were really, really hoping that Olu Fashanu was going to be available to them and they were going to be able to have their left tackle, but it didn't happen. The Jets of all teams took that tackle away from them. So for the Saints, I think they were a little deflated, like we talked to Roderick about certain players that teams like, and then they get taken in front of them. But they kind of came back and they're like, all right, well, what's the best option? Another tackle. Talisi Fuaga, who's definitely worth the value there. They lock up that position there, but they still need another tackle. So what's interesting is that they take Fuaga. So far to this date, Ryan Ramczyk has not decided to retire just yet officially. There's speculation, but not yet. So this might push him out the door, so to speak, where, hey, we got your replacement. You're good to go. We're tired of waiting for you to decide. We got our guy now. Goodbye. So that's kind of like what it seems like is going to happen. Kool-Aid McKinstry, I love that pick for them to be able to get him later in the draft. Definitely, if he didn't have his Lisfranc injury, was easily a first-round pick. So definitely huge value. And you brought up Spencer Rattler, which is interesting because I think this kid has the potential to develop into a starter. Already, you talk about 2 years ago where he was seen as, if he came out that year, he was seen as like this top quarterback prospect that if he made that decision, we might be talking about Rattler right now in the NFL starting for a team, but ends up staying, has attitude adjustment that he needed to correct, moved to a different college, went to South Carolina to reinvent himself. Now seems like he's turned on, you know, a whole new leaf here, more responsible, more respectful, listening to coaching and executing. So I love the kid. I think he has a bright future. But I think with this organization, I was kind of scratching my head why they took Spencer Rattler, already having Derek Carr. And you could say, oh, yeah, but they're planning on the future. Okay, you could say that for sure. But they also drafted a kid 2 years ago from Tennessee who was deemed as a starter-worthy type of quarterback, but also had an injury. So I wonder how they're going to work that whole quarterback room out now at this point. Are they going to give up on the Tennessee kid? Or are they maybe possibly thinking about in the very near future to move on from Carr? So that'll be something to kind of evaluate and watch as we go.
Yeah, definitely. That would be a nice storyline to follow through with that one. I mean, because I think even
you're in here first.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, the speculation, you know, Raiders, I mean, they would love to have him back, I'm sure, even after the what happened when he wasn't there. I mean, you guys want to get him so out the door so freaking fast, and then you don't have him, and now see what you have. I mean, how is that Jimmy Garoppolo situation for you doing? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, then we got the New England Patriots here. Very easy. They took Drake May. You know, Jalen Polk, who I think is an underrated receiver. is going to play out well for them. But other than that, you know, they go back and they draft another receiver in Javon Baker. I really did like that. But I think other than the Drake May pick, to me, mm-hmm. it's a lot of like boom or bust again. Kind of similar to what the Jaguars did, where some people are very high on certain players, but then there's the other half of the league where they're like, no, we're good. So is it scheme? Is it, you know, in their eyes, best player available, or were they drafting off a need throughout this draft? So I hope it's not drafting off a need, because usually those draft picks don't work out so well. Mm-hmm. Besides the Drake May pick, love the Drake May pick, right. But besides that, I think it's a little up and down for me.
Yeah, and what do you think even about Joe Milton late? I mean, do you think they should have just even grabbed more of a draft, you know, like a depth piece? I mean, because even have Bailey Zapp here, you could probably even lock up as your backup for a while. You mm-hmm. know, Jacoby Brissett obviously is a loner to help out until maybe May can, you know, become that starter. Or possibly he becomes the starter this year and you got Brissett as your backup.
May has stated that he's gunning for the job. Mm-hmm. He's going to try to beat Brissett, which I think he can. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing with rookies, typically your first year, I just don't want Patriot fans to have too big of an expectation.
Yes.
For him.
Mm-hmm.
You owe me a soda.
No. Oh, yeah.
and so I would say this, if Drake May does in fact win the job, do not think for one second he's going to get you. Don't expect, I will say, double digit wins. Every quarterback is, even in the rookie, it's rare that they come in and they take the league over by storm like a CJ Stroud. It's rare for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So keep in perspective that he's coming in as a rookie. He may make some critical mistakes. It may cost you some games, but all in all, it's an experience thing for him that he's going to get better as the season goes on. And you might see, not even a finished product at the end of the year, but you might see a better product where you're like, oh, I feel confident next season we're going to be even better. You know what I mean? So I love Drake May. I think he is the answer for the Patriots going forward. I just think they need to kind of fill out that offense a little bit better, you know, in terms of next season, adding to that. They still could attack maybe free agency still. Like, they might be able to – maybe Tyler Boyd's out there. Maybe he's interested in being a wide receiver for the Patriots. Solid player, so – that's possible too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And
we go to your New York Giants now.
Yeah, the Giants. Let's go right to the Giants. And Malik Nabers, again, I was ecstatic. This is one of the first times, you know, again, I wasn't, you know, freaking out in a Giants draft, you mm-hmm. know, what's going on. And when I happened to see Nabers there, I'm like, this is nice. It's got to be it. But then again, I was just doubtful. I'm like, what are they going to do, though? Are they going to do it?
I mean, yeah, as a fan.
Waiting on bated breath.
Yeah, know? As a fan, you're like, please don't screw this up. Please don't screw this up.
Yes, yes. Dubin, I know a lot of people like him.
I love it.
Again, with some of them, like when he had the conversation on the phone and stuff like that, too, I'm just worried about him, though, sometimes.
But I love the pick.
Attitude. But some of these other guys, too, especially their later draft picks, excited to kind of join the team and try to make some things happen. The kid out of Purdue, Tyrone Tracy Jr., I liked a lot of the kind of, you know, darting moves that he made too as a running back. You'd hope that he could maybe do something in the passing game for them.
He's not a polished running back, though. He's only played 1 year as a running back, and at the next level where he may be asked to do a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. You're right. He's shifty and everything, but he has that experience from running routes as a wide receiver.
Right.
Played 3 years at a wide receiver before converting to running back this past season. So there's still nuances to his game that he needs to learn and whatnot. But I think he is a dynamite type of weapon mm-hmm. where in terms of coming out of the backfield, there's not going to be anybody better that runs routes other than him. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a disadvantage that you guys might be able to utilize.
Right.
And then beyond that, I'll also say too, is like a little bit of a sleeper is that your corner there from Kentucky, Andrew Phillips. Think he's going to develop into a nice starter. Tyler Newbin, I have no concerns. This dude was my number one safety coming out. He can cover. He can come up and tackle extremely well. Hard hitter. Very smart type of player. So I think all in all, the Giants overall, like, really did extremely well in terms of getting value and getting potential players like Theo Johnson. Mm-hmm. I love Theo Johnson. You can't teach his size. And the fact that he's fast for his size, which doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right. I watched his – when I was watching some of his tape, he didn't look fast. He looks slow.
Yeah.
But then he runs a 4.640 for this gigantic mammoth of a tight end at 6'6", 260 pounds. Like, the dude's big. Can definitely block for you. Now, I think that at the next level, coaching has got to work on his route running ability. Because if he can get that down, then this dude is going to be a big-time weapon for the Giants.
Yeah, so but neighbors, I mean, I'm excited.
Neighbors, you got to be excited about, because now you finally got a true number one wide receiver, a guy that is a mismatch for most corners.
Yeah, and like you said, even defensive back, I like the situation there too, because, again, these loners that we've kind of gotten, you know, we did okay with, but again, it's
had to make it work.
Hit or miss and stuff like that. I'm looking for somebody newer and get some consistency.
Before we get to the Jets pick here, I just want to say, like, listen, guys, if you're new to the show, if you're just tuning in, if you're new viewers, we really appreciate you guys being here. You can find this podcast as well as any of our political, entertainment, and sports podcasts out there at our website, grumblingsmedia.com. That's grumblingsmedia.com. And you can also subscribe to us on YouTube, Grumblings Media, and rumble.com. Also, anywhere you get your podcast, that's right, it doesn't just stop there. You can take us on the go with you guys. Apple, Google, Spotify, or Pandora, drop a follow there. Become part of the Blitz Nation here.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. Blitz Nation, Joe. I like it. Bring it. All right, the Jets here. Again, tackle, like we talked about it, like what do they do here? The clock was running. I'm like, do they go quarterback? You know, what's the situation?
Right.
Do they go Brock Bowers? Because, again, we heard about that. I'm like, right. Where are they going to go?
Rumors.
You know, so like, yeah. They really liked him a lot. We said it, you know, we said it in past shows before. Aaron Rodgers loves a good tight end, and there it is. And like, this has got to be it. This guy, it's going to fit him. And they do the smart thing, though, too.
They
I think, again, you know,
they did a good job.
Right there, like you said, other teams have wanted him. The Jets go and snag him right ahead and protect him. Protect Aaron Rodgers, because, again, you invest that time, that money in this elite quarterback here, you know, Hall of Famer, Aaron Rodgers, you don't want to see him go down. You know what I mean? You want to see him do what he's here meant to do here for New York and keep him upright.
The Jets fans, they never want to see Rodgers get touched again.
No.
Because that kind of crushed their hopes and dreams last season. And a lot of sports fans were shocked that, like, they had him for, like, four plays and it's over. Yep. That whole dream. So, hopefully this year is going to be way different for them. And I think this, you're right, it is a smart pick. Olu Fashanu was seen as the best left tackle option in this draft, I think. Like, Joel is great at playing left and right, so he had that versatility, which put him ahead of Olu. But Olu, as a pure left tackle, that was the guy to go with. So, and interesting enough, when you look at their depth chart, you look at some of the contracts, Tyron Smith, who came over from the Cowboys, he's missed some time here and there, played fairly healthy last season to earn him a one-year deal with the Jets for $20-plus million, so it's not like it's cheap. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's the plan, is to have him as a starter. Now, they draft Olu with the thought process of, now we have not only our future at that spot at left tackle, but if Tyron Smith happens to get hurt again, we have an answer that can just, we can insert him and he'll be plug and play for the next 10 years at that position. So good idea for the Jets. I think that was a very smart pick, and the value is there as well. So love that pick. Other than that, you look at the rest of the thing, and we talked about quarterback possibly being an option for the Jets, and they managed to address that with Jordan Travis from Florida State. This kid, I'm telling you right now, he's got the arm, he's got accuracy, he's got great mobility, and he's unreal smart. Like, he's going to be able to diagnose defenses, learn the playbook really fast. The only reason why this kid, as much as I'm hyping him up, kind of slid in that fashion, is the fact that he had a major injury, ankle injury, with Florida State late last season, which he's still recovering from. But looks like he will be able to recover kind of like early training camp or mid training camp, will be ready to go. He's already starting to throw kind of light, but he's someone to keep an eye on, that now under the tutelage of Aaron Rodgers, this kid I think is going to flourish underneath him. And then when it's time for Rodgers to go, Travis is going to be the one taking it over and continuing the Jets winning ways. We hope, right?
They can only hope, right?
We can only hope. And Malachi, again, one more real quick, sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Malachi Corley, the Western Kentucky wide receiver that they got, stud. This dude is like a joystick on the football field. We talk about Ladd McConkey and how quick and fast he is. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, Malachi Corley with the ball in his hands in the open field, it's extremely dangerous. And already with the weapons that they have, I really like what they've managed to do around Rodgers. You got protection up front. You got a future left tackle. You give them even more weapons that they're going to utilize. And they have a power back in Braylon Allen from Wisconsin, a guy that loves to smash people's faces with the ball in his hands. So great job by the Jets.
All right, here we go. Let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles. Joe, again, they always draft well, too, on top of it. Howie Roseman on top of it, getting things done. Mm-hmm. And we said it, too, almost how the rich get richer again. They get their DBs that they want here. Cooper DeJean, you would think, holy moly, we talked about him in the first round. Able to get him in at pick 40, Joe. And even before that, they got Quinyon Mitchell. I mean, so – like we said, the Eagles, you're just like, come on, man. Me as a Giants fan, I'm just like, you are freaking kidding me, bro? This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous here. And then even added some of the other pieces that they have here on top of it. They only just got better and you know, filled their other gaps, you know, as they went further.
If there was an opportunity to steal the GM, Howie Roseman, I am willing – if I'm the owner
– is that one of the things you make a trade or something?
No. I'm willing to pay him way more money than that team will.
Yeah.
I'm going to do whatever it takes to kind of lure him away from the Eagles because this guy gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And every single year he crushes the draft because we mentioned a few teams before. Eagles were one of them. But he takes best player available. And sometimes what's frightening about all this is that – even though he's taking BPA with almost every pick, it also ends up being a need somehow for this guy.
Right.
So you look at, you know, before when they drafted Jalen Carter, slid all the way through the top 10, and the Eagles were able to go up and get him. And it's like, that was a need at the time, but BPA was through the roof. They managed to get that. They got Jordan Davis from Georgia who slid to them, and they took him. So now they got two, you know, bookend D tackles, if you want to call it.
Right.
And then you come to this draft, and they needed corner. To me, that was like the only major need that they had because both corners in Slay and Bradbury are getting older. They're right on the cusp, of retirement. So they needed the guy. They not only get the number one corner on my board in Quinyon Mitchell, who's going to be a lockdown corner, but now Cooper DeJean, here's the crazy thing. He fits them extremely well because they do play a lot of zone.
Yeah.
He's going to flourish in that defense. And let's just say, if he doesn't work out at corner, he could be your starting safety. This is unbelievable that Howie Roseman was able to pull this off, and everybody is like drafting blindfolded, and the Eagles are the only ones able to see it. And then after those two picks, they come back and they get another edge rusher and Jalix Hunt from Houston Christian. I think this kid is another underrated pass rusher that the Eagles, it falls right to them. And it just seems as everything kind of works out for them. You look at, and then they get a running back for depth, Will Shipley. Basically, I like to call him the Hunter Renfro running backs because he's not the most elite. He's not the best, but he just somehow makes plays happen. So projection is there. And then you get linebacker with Jeremiah Trotter. Johnny Wilson, wide receiver from Florida State, who is an immense human being. Now, some teams viewed him as more of a tight end, converting to a tight end at the next level. But, man, a wide receiver that big, I'm curious to see how they're going to utilize him. Maybe in the slot as wide receiver in the red zone would be kind of exciting to watch. But, Jesus, I got to say, I think the NFL Network or NFL.com gave him an A-. It's like A++. Like you can't get a better draft for the Eagles than every single season. They seem to just kill it every year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? And, you know, even Jeremiah Trotter Jr., I think he's even a tip to the cap and all that stuff, too. So I think it's a nice
fit for unreal everybody. Value. Unreal. And I get it. We talk about it, too, once in a while. We're like, oh, well, one player will slide because teams don't have him fit their scheme or he's not their type of player. And that's why some of these guys fall farther than we expect. But, man, I'm sorry. When you just just take best player available. It seems to work out for a lot of teams, a lot of better teams anyway.
And again, like in this draft, again, where they thought they might even have to move up, a lot of those teams that are already good because they made playoffs, you know, and things like that, you know, the
Eagles were one of them.
They were able to get even good, you know, like you said, BPA right there. You know
right.
What I mean?
But that's the funny thing is the Eagles were trying to trade up to get Quinyon Mitchell.
Yeah.
The trade never got agreed to, and he still ended up falling right to them.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
It's the same as the other team that we're about to talk about.
Yeah, and the Pittsburgh Steelers here, Joe. Take it away with this.
Unbelievable. This is another team that just, you know, they again, BPA, best player available, and the guys that were available were also needs. Mm-hmm. It's another, like, Eagles-type draft where they needed help on offensive line. What did they do? Oh, we need a center. Oh, it's okay. We got Zach Frazier, who some people viewed as number one or number two at that position. We're good there. Oh, yeah, by the way, we also got Troy Fontenot with our first pick. That's going to be – he's going to be our right tackle. He's going to be plug and play there. Broderick Jones, if you remember, their draft pick from a year ago, he's going to move to left tackle. Now you have bookend tackles. You both took him in the first round. You also have a starting center. That offensive line is looking pretty damn stout now when you look at all. And that they don't stop there. They got tremendous value after that. Roman Wilson, I talk about Malachi Corley being a joystick on the football field. Roman Wilson has not only some of the best routes, but he is so deceptive in his routes, he throws corners off. I remember the Senior Bowl where Roman Wilson versus Quinyon Mitchell. And that matchup was fun to watch. Sometimes Quinyon got the best of him. Sometimes Roman Wilson got the best of Quinyon. So this kid is going to be a stud for the Steelers at the next level. Another instant starter. And then you go with Peyton Wilson, my number one linebacker. Oh, my God, I can't believe he fell. But the reason why he fell, turns out his knee is in bad shape. So even though the Steelers took a little bit of a risk with this pick, the value is tremendous, and if you can get his knee right, much like Smith for the Cowboys when they drafted him, Jalen Smith, or
yes,
linebacker from Notre Dame.
Yep,
he had nerve damage. There was a lot of concerns throughout the league. He fell to the second round. Cowboys took a chance on him, and he had a really good career for them. So I think this is another situation where Peyton Wilson gets his knee right, stays healthy. This is going to be another yet big, huge steal, and it doesn't stop there. Also with the next pick, guard Mason McCormick. Came from a small school, but I think he could develop into a starting guard. I'm beside myself. I just can't believe how well the Steelers also did in this draft. They also killed it for their franchise. It's going to be exciting to watch these teams now, because now that we've gotten an idea of what they were looking at, they were able to capitalize on those decisions, and now it makes them ready to take control of their division, most likely, or at least compete
for it. Put some pressure on that where they kind of, you know, even though last year, I thought, again, I look at this team and I'm thinking like, well, this year they're going to bounce back or go drop out and be that fourth in that division because it's getting better. That division's getting tight, but now really they can just fight right back again. And now they've got Russell Wilson even too on top of this one with Justin Fields. You got three Wilsons on the team now too. That's pretty crazy. It's like, what the hell? And who knows? Again, Mike Tomlin, again, your job just went into jeopardy maybe
very
too.
Very tough.
He saved again, possibly, who on this one? You know,
very tough.
That's all about just what the GM does. And this way, you get a good GM that can get this stuff there, it makes your job even easier too.
There's a lot of AFC divisions that are so competitive, is definitely one of them, where one player makes that much more of a difference. Yeah. And in order for the Steelers to kind of stay up to par with the Bengals and the Ravens and all that, they have to have a good draft too. So they're able to kind of stay right there with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And now let's look at the 49ers. They're getting towards the end of the list. Ricky Parasol, you know, again, there was their wide receiver. We looked at that right there with the 31st overall. I know you loved him. Absolutely. Yeah, they're just filling depth pieces. I think things that they need, you know, to especially in lieu of what's going to go on. You know, is Brandon Ayuk still going to be there? Still, they got to work things out.
Two of my favorite picks. I mean, you already mentioned one, Ricardo Green.
Yeah,
or Renardo Green. Sorry, gifted corner. Like, this guy is super quick, read and reacts, does not hesitate. Good tackler, makes plays on the football, and I think he's going to be a starter for them, like easily. Ricky Parasol, like you just kind of brought him up, unbelievable. Like, this is the first stage, if you will, of the Niners getting ready to move on from possibly Debo or Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. We know we've heard rumors before the draft. Yeah. I still think those things are still in play. I think there's teams that are still interested in trading for one of those receivers. But Ricky Parasol, it might actually be a starting caliber player, definitely, for this upcoming season. And let's see how the rest of that situation shakes out. So that's going to be interesting.
All right, let's move on to the Seattle Seahawks. Where's Tom Leiter at, man? You know, Tom Leiter, our guy. He's got to be on this. You know, he's been talking Seahawks all the time, you know.
That's
and
right.
Here they are, D-tackle. Again, we said they need to address, you know, the defensive side of the ball a little bit here too, and they definitely did in this draft, and then also, you know, sprinkling a little offensive line too. So they definitely attacked needs that they had to go at, and Byron Murphy, the second here, the D-tackle, I think it's a good pickup for the Seattle Seahawks. And again, it's another team that seems to draft pretty well too. And even, you know, at least under, you know, their former coach, you know, they were well coached and did a whole lot with what I looked at, you know, on paper sometimes you're kind of like, that's another team. I thought they were kind of going to take a step back, but mm-hmm. then they still were competitive and really forcing that division at times.
Yeah. I mean, this is the fun part of the, of a team like Seattle. We've heard that John Schneider from Scott Engel, that, yep. He's unpredictable in the draft. He likes to go for value, but also you never know what kind of value he's looking for in what position. So very unpredictable, but I don't think it was that unpredictable of a first pick. Like, you get a stud in Byron Murphy, who I had as my number one D tackle, and it wasn't even close. A guy that's going to be able to disrupt the middle every freaking snap for you. And then you have your young edge rushers come off the edge. I think that's a marriage made for them. And this is the type of position for Seattle that kind of hasn't been answered to kind of find that next true starting caliber D tackle for the long run. This guy definitely fills that void. Christian Haynes, their second pick, I thought was another steal. Going to be an amazing starting guard for them. Very, very tenacious, nasty. Guy that loves to pancake people. So that's going to be exciting for them to do there. And then after that, it's a lot of like decent picks. But then again, I'm not sure how they're going to pan out type of deal. But I do like what Seattle was able to do. They nabbed needs. They got guys that they believe have higher value than maybe some other people do. So we'll see how this draft all falls together for them.
All right, we got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now. Again, they grab Graham Barton here. We had talked about the center situation with these guys.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That was a big topic, right, especially when we talked with Roderick again. So right. We had great guests, by the way,
we did.
For the NFL draft. First time we went live during the draft ever.
A lot of fun.
And it was a hell of a lot of fun. Roderick David, shout out to him. It was a pleasure having him on there. And Scott Engel, like you said, too, because their insight on top of it, they were telling us the ins and outs before the drafts, you know, the picks happened. And lo and behold, a lot of it came to fruition and a lot of the insight. It was awesome. So shout out to them. And we hope to have them on in a little while during the season. But Tampa Bay, again, trying to get center to help up that center position here to look forward on that because, again, Jensen, you know, had the injuries and things like that. They needed to help Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and then he retired.
Healthy. Yeah, yeah.
That kind of threw a wrench into it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just a surprise, too, because it seemed like, all right, maybe he's sticking around, and then all of a sudden, no.
Yeah, because he still had, like, you know, I believe he still had two more years on his extension. So, hey, he had enough. He was beat up, you know, did what he had to do. They won a championship while he was there, so that's kind of really put the feather in his cap.
And they needed to grab a linebacker, too, on top of it because, again, Devin Lloyd's no longer there either. You know, they wanted to fill that position.
Let's just talk about that real quick. He's not a linebacker. He is a D-end. Alabama, he's very thick, very long type of guy, power type of guy. We talk about verse in that aspect, but Braswell, to me, I'm not very excited about. I think there's a reason why he wasn't that dynamic. Like, he was good at Alabama, but he wasn't like what Dallas Turner was, where talk of the town, super elite traits. Braswell, to me, is a little lethargic in terms of his DN play. Very strong and powerful, but I don't think he's going to get away with that at the next level. So I really wasn't high on that pick. But Graham Barton, to me, was kind of like – it was one of the perfect picks for them.
Yeah, yeah.
We both knew and expected them to take interior offensive line. But with where they were picking, it could have been any number of these guys. So Graham Barton, another excellent pick. He's going to – they're going to put him wherever they need to, whether it be center, left guard, right guard. It's going to be one of those spots. So I think that's they definitely did their homework on that. And then other thing I wanted to take observation here real quick is Jalen McMillan, wide receiver later on, they were able to get an underrated receiver that I could definitely see him kind of taking over a starting role there. And Bucky Irving, one of the more intriguing running back prospects from Oregon, who is not your featured type of back. He's more of a receiving threat, but a jitterbug of a running back, a guy who is extremely difficult to tackle in the open field. This guy makes literally anybody miss. He's so quick and shifty and little, like he's able to like turn on a dime, stop on a dime. But I think he's going to be intriguing to watch. And depending on how this running back position shakes out for Tampa Bay, he might have a real nuance in this offense this year as a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, it's something else. You know, I'm looking to see what Tampa Bay is going to do with this again, because last year I really didn't – I wasn't buying in. And, you know, did a whole lot. You know what I mean? They did a whole lot. And, again,
they surprised people.
A lot about a quarterback to where we're trying to grade them, see where they are, especially where, you know, Baker Mayfield was picked and the road that he has taken all around to finally lay out here in Tampa. It looks like he finally might have another home here in Tampa. Getting down to the end of the list here, we've got Tennessee Titans. They go for tackle again. J.C. Latham's right there, too. They're able to draft him and Devondre Sweat, too. You know, they get some more guys here, defense, offensive tackle, too, that help out Will Levis. We talked about that in the first round, how they needed that, the tackle situation, because of injuries that you know, talk about teams that have a label on themselves, no matter even what regime has kind of been there.
Yeah.
It seems like them and the Chargers, we're always talking about how good they could, good can they be as long as they stay healthy. And that offensive line seems to get banged up a lot of times, and just they keep, you know, trying to find guys here and there, you know, back when they had Feeney and things like that. So now it's the Titans here. They get J.C. Latham to try and keep Will Levis, their quarterback now that they grabbed, to stay healthy and move forward.
This is an interesting pick, and I'm not really sure I agree with it. J.C. Latham, if you wanted to try him at right tackle, because he played a lot there, he also played left tackle for Alabama, but I think right side of the offensive line is where his where he should be. I don't really see him as a tackle. I see him more of as a right guard. And if you look at Tennessee's depth chart, they are geared to take a left tackle. Like, they don't need a right tackle. They have a solid offensive line, but that left tackle spot is so weak that I thought for sure that possibly Olufashana was going to be that pick, or they could have went a different direction and said, we'll address tackle later. Let's go wide receiver. I thought maybe that could be with Roma Dunze there, that type of thing, to add more weaponry for Will Levis.
Yep.
But J.C. Latham is confusing to me, because if that's the plan, is to move him to left side and have him play left tackle, I'm not 100% sure it's going to work out. I think he has the capability to develop into a good tackle, but I know that he struggles with speed rushers, and at this level in the NFL, you have to deal with that quite often. So a little bit of a question mark for me. Going with that. And then we go into their second pick with Tavondre Sweat, a guy that had DUIs right before the draft and kind of a little bit of off-field concerns coming in here. And they still were like, we don't care. We're going to take him in the second round. So it's like, to me, I think a lot of their picks, after that, it's a lot of developmental picks, guys that may become something, may not. But the first two picks were big question marks for me, so I wasn't thrilled with Tennessee's draft. But maybe it pans out for them. That's the Titans' hope here. I'm just not that confident in their draft process this year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the new coaching staff and everybody there for the Titans. See what they can do. And again, without Derrick Henry now, what is the whole team going to look like?
Well, it's a different offense now too. So you know, wasn't in the plans. Decided to move on. Didn't want to pay him the big money. And you know, let's see what they can do. Listen, they got Tony Pollard. they did replace him. It's not like they don't have a starting caliber running back. They have Tony Pollard, right. And they got the kid TJ. I'm gonna forget his name. It's a unique last name. It starts with an S, but I can't remember. But he's a gifted. Is it Sharp or something? Maybe I don't know. But anyway,
that sounds familiar.
So they got him that kind of came on late last Tajay season
Spears,
too. Tajay Spears, yeah. So they got him that came on late last season. Now you pair him up with Tony Pollard. They're going to be able to kind of rotate those running backs. Mm-hmm. They're going to throw to them in the open field, let them work the field that way. And it is going to be a different style of offense altogether. You know, Brian comes from the Cincinnati Bengals. They like to kind of mix it up a little bit. It's going to be a balanced offense. So I think Tennessee fans are going to like the new offense and the style that they're going to be able to utilize.
Yeah, so now moving on to the final team here.
Final team,
here we are, the Washington Commanders. Again, this is the last of the six quarterbacks taken in this first round here. Again, it was a historical draft here for round one and
sure
quarterbacks.
Was.
And Jaden Daniels, there it goes. It was just like a storybook. Everybody was going through it. It was funny when we were talking about it with Scott. He was just like, oh, man, no surprises here in the top, you know, 10 or whatever.
Right.
But Jaden Daniels, again, good pickup for them. It fit the scheme. Cliff Kingsbury there in Washington. If
loves
some
his mobile quarterback.
He loves it. Yep, it's going to work out for them there. And Newton there also at the D-tackle situation. Just trying to move forward here and make a difference in this division to where the Giants seem like they're trying to get better here. The Cowboys are still there, and the Eagles are the Eagles. So, I mean, they got to do something here.
Yeah, and they do that, and they get their piece in Jaden Daniels, who's not only going to bring his passing talents, but also his mobility talent. Like, similar, I'm not going to say just like him, but similar to Lamar Jackson, I view Jaden Daniels as a better passer coming out of college. Now, of course, he still needs to work on some things. He definitely has to get bigger because he is very small on the top part of his frame. But nonetheless, they got themselves one hell of a talent, a guy that can do it all at that quarterback position. Other than that, I love their draft, by the way. You know, they got Jazon Newton with their second pick, which to me was a first-round talent, the second best D-tackle on my board. He ends up there. Mike Sanders still, the corner from Michigan, who I think is going to be an excellent nickel corner at the next level. And then you get to, like, the TCU tackle from Brandon Coleman later on in the draft. Luke McCaffrey, which everybody should remember. That's Christian's brother, if you don't already know.
If you don't know, now you know.
Interesting thing about Luke is the fact that he was a quarterback for 3 years before converting to wide receiver and was still able to get drafted.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. I understand the legacy, you know, the bloodlines and all that, but, man, Luke McCaffrey, gifted athlete, good for him. And he's going to do some damage with Washington. Maybe not his rookie year, but he definitely should be part of it. One other one that I really, really liked was later is Temple linebacker Jordan McGee. I think he's a little bit underrated. I think he could easily develop to be a starter for them. So I think all in all – Washington did a killer job in the draft. They're another team that drafted extremely well, drafted for value and need at the same time. So Washington, great job, guys.
There you go, and there you have it. That is the NFL Draft 2024 recap. We talked about what we liked, what we didn't like. We love the comments out there. We definitely thank you guys for the comments.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys.
Unfortunately, again, we ran wicked late, but you know, we love talking about this. We had a lot of the comments out there, so we love the interaction out there. It's a full show, so we'll just bump, you know, what we had in plan to the next show.
Yeah, we can do it.
It's going to be a whole lot of fun. We have a lot to talk about that, too, and that is the 2021 draft. We get to take a look back that now, go into the past, and see how they turned out here 3 years later. That's right, 3 years later. That's what it takes to kind of see what these guys come out to look. And it gets kind of sketchy here. The verdict could be out. You guys let us know what you think about that one. But Joe, tell everybody where you can get some of these podcasts like ourselves here, the Blindside Blitz and others on Grublings Media.
So what I was going to say is, like, you know, it's hit or miss with the 2021 draft. So what's interesting is you're going to find out when we review it next week that as much as people say go get the quarterback, maybe that's not the right idea. So for trading up. Anyway, we're going to get into it. Listen, if you're new to the show, if you've lasted this long, we really do appreciate you guys. Thanks for all the support. Thanks for all the comments. It's been amazing. Make sure you like, share, comment every week here, Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock with us on the Blindside Blitz. But you can also find us and many other podcasts from grumblingsmedia.com. You can follow our political, our entertainment, our sports podcasts out there. We have a website. It's called grumblingsmedia.com. Make sure you head over there. Check it out. Follow other podcasts as well. Anywhere when you get YouTube, rumble.com, make sure you go over there, subscribe, and follow along with this Blitz journey that we're going to be taking. Also, that's right. Anywhere you get your podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, you name it, Pandora, we're there. Make sure you drop a follow. Take us on the go and become part of the Blitz Nation.
That's right. Now, before we take off, we got to let you know. Like Joe just said, if you haven't subscribed or anything else to these other websites and other shows, click the link below. That's right, right here. We got some more videos to check out. If you like this one, you're going to check out some others, and hopefully you guys will enjoy some of that and join along with the fans of Grumblings Media. So click the link below to find some more and join along with us here at Grumblings Media. Take care.
Hey, everybody. This is Big John from Grumblings Media, and I just want to say thank you for watching our content. If you want to support our efforts here at Grumblings Media, just smash the subscribe button right here. Totally free, or just go ahead and consume more of our great content. Click either one of these two boxes.